Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 6, Episode 16, entitled Last Day on Earth. What do you think of this episode, Aaron?
I don't know. I might have a surprising take.
Okay.
There is a lot of stupid bullshit in this episode, and a lot of kind of moralizing and whatnot, and they drug out the reveal of Negan way too long. But I actually found this episode surprisingly entertaining. I enjoyed watching it. I am not even close to quitting on The Walking Dead. But what they did at the end
right.
is in fucking defensible, man.
Yeah, like,
I went to all the usual spots, the forums, Alan Supplewell's comments, Reddit, and I'm not seeing many people defending this decision.
Yeah, I just got done, well, most of the way done with compiling emails and sorting that all out, and the vast majority of the takes are like, what the fuck, this is bullshit.
There are
some dissenters, but very few.
Like, you perfectly cast and costume and actually do a very good job of bolderizing Negan's dialogue.
Right.
And Jeffrey Dean Morgan is awesome, and he's charismatic, and he hits all the right notes, and then you just willfully fuck up the ending. Like, I'm trying to think, it's impossible not to compare it to, like, Game of Thrones, and I'm not going to, even though it's been 3 fucking years, I'm not going to get into to particular spoilers on
yep.
that. But there are signature moments in that show, and say what you will about it, the rise and fall of the quality on Game of Thrones, they do tend to nail those moments. And the thought of them doing something like this, where you take a signature moment and you try to turn it to, if you want a cliffhanger, just fade to black before Negan starts the meeny, miny, mo stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, to go ahead and do the savage beating of some mystery person from some PO. I saw some people on Reddit say that the point of view made it feel like they're beating the audience up.
Okay.
You know, look at him, take it like a champ. 17 million, you fuckers, going to be back next season. You know, it's gross, and I don't understand. I don't get it, man.
I don't get cliffhangers. I guess, I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me anymore. Like, it used to, I think.
Yeah.
In Lost, there were a lot of these kind of, like, what the hell is going on?
Well, but that's a great
cliffhanger,
like,
things, but, like,
sure.
I'm over cliffhangers. Like, give me the emotional impact of something like a Game of Thrones, where we have feedback about this, and I might talk about it a little there, but that really works. So much of the Breaking Bad stuff works, and none of those are cliffhangers necessarily.
Well, I've been saying this in the spoiler section. I'm not sure if we talked about it. It probably must be in the spoiler section, but all you guys that avoid spoilers can hear it now. A cliffhanger effectively shouldn't be, oh my god, what's going to happen? Some titanic event happens, and the cliffhanger is, what is going to happen after? You know, what is going to be the reaction? You don't take the climax and put it to, here's another reason it's so disrespectful to fans, especially the hardcore fans, because this absolutely will get fucking leaked. As soon as the casting comes out, as soon as cast photos start
right.
coming out, as soon as the leaks come out, and, like, is it a better experience for the fan to find out in the moment in a cinematically satisfying way, in a devastating way, or to have it leaked out on some fucking Walking Dead fan site? Again, I'm not anywhere close to give up on the show, because I felt the back half of the season was super entertaining.
Right. Speaking of spoilers, you're spoiling the entire email section. So,
oh,
maybe we won't talk about this too much more
okay.
right now.
What did you, I mean? I assume,
but
I
overall, yeah, overall, I don't think the episode was bad. I think it was a huge, huge clusterfuck at the end. Just big mistake with that cliffhanger. Let's leave that. But the scene building up to it, I felt personally, because I knew the spoilers going in, and I knew what was going to happen there,
yeah.
I was waiting for it, and I wasn't like, oh, this is so suspenseful, like, they're really doing a good job of making me wonder how this is all going to play out, because I already knew, and so,
sure.
for me, it was hard to enjoy that scene without going, come on, get to the point, like, you've been talking about Pee-Pee Pants City for a half hour now. Like, it was
I felt like that tension...
10-minute scene.
I felt that tension was fine. I felt like the endless roadblocks starts to...
I think it's better if you're unspoiled, though. Like, that scene...
Yeah, yeah, okay.
...is more suspenseful and more interesting if you're not spoiled with what's going on.
I'm just saying, other side of the coin, I was digging it. I was having no problems. I felt like the pacing was great. Like, I felt like the big problems were... You know, arriving there structurally is there's too many fucking roadblocks. There's too many people in that circle. Like, you know, I don't think we needed every main cast member to be on their knees in front of Negan. And that made the, you know, and he had to give everybody a little bit of attention, you know. And I'm like, it really should have been like half a dozen people there and beat the holy hell out of one of them. And then we see everyone's reactions to it. And then what? And I don't know how much of this was because... they couldn't film what they needed to film. Like, it was just too disgusting or gross. But I saw Carol pull a zombie's face off.
Yeah.
There's... I've seen people be beat to death with bats in this show before. I've seen Rick tear a guy's throat out. I don't get it, man.
No, they're doing...
I'm going back and spoiling the feedback again.
Yeah, we have a lot of stuff to talk about in feedback. I want to wait mostly until we get there. But I'm with you. I think the pacing wasn't bad. Kind of splitting it up between Morgan and Carol and Rick and company on the road was a good idea. That made it feel like, you know, instead of them having endless conversations about morality and bullshit we've heard 1,000 times while driving from roadblock to roadblock, we got to go off on this little road trip with Carol and Morgan.
Yeah.
Broke up the monotony of it.
Yeah, but unfortunately, most of their dialogue was just Carol saying, "Did you read my letter? Here, let me state it in its entirety again."
Are you not getting it?
Yeah, no, it's...
But I've also felt like, aside from the dialogue there, I thought what they were doing was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. The idea that Morgan has to kill now to protect the people he loves, and he's kind of... Carol's making the fucking point right there. That she's been trying to say all along. And if he didn't get it before when she said, "Do you not fucking get it?" He gets it now. I would hope.
Did you watch any of The Talking Dead last night?
I didn't, but some people wrote in to tell me some things about it.
I watched quite a bit, and it's like, man, I just once wanted Hardwick to go off script and do some follow-up. Like, I get it. It's but... Like, come on, you've got to speak for the... Like, it's one thing when you've got a divided... Because a lot of times we're the minority opinion, right? We like, hey, this is all right, or this kind of sucks, it needs to be better, it should be better, it can be better. But it feels like, I don't know, 90% of the fan base is having this opinion. At least the passionate fan base that participates in online forums and watches things like The Talking Dead. Like, how much can they do this before The Walking Dead kills The Talking Dead? As a cash cow for them.
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't fault Chris Hardwick for not asking those questions, because ultimately it's AMC's show. And next season, if he asks those questions, they come back as Talking Dead with Stephen Tobolowsky or somebody else.
Well, no, I don't fault him either. He's getting a paycheck. He's doing the role that he's put on that show to do.
But do wish he had that latitude.
And I'm just saying, like, AMC, I think, could be ruining their own show.
Although, how else would they go about it?
Yeah, and as long as they bring on the celebrities, people are going to watch it.
I know. It's a real shame that none of this seems to have any consequences for the show. I don't know what the ratings are like. I haven't checked it out in a while.
It's been dipping, but not like, you know, they haven't lost half their audience.
You mean it's been dipping like a show that's been on the air for 6 seasons?
No, it's not. It's been dipping a lot slighter than that. Yeah, it's still, I think last I looked, there's still 13, 14 million people watching this thing from a high of like 18.
Yeah, so. That seems like season 6 type of show, but just one that started off extremely high.
Sure.
I don't know. You want to get into the recap on this?
Yeah, just a couple notes in the early going. I kind of broke things because it was so fragmented, and we're just going around and getting all these. I kind of put some of this together, so kind of roll with it. Hey, before we get into the episode proper, I want to mention again that we're playing through the latest Telltale Walking Dead video game. This is the one that centers on Michonne's story, or as we like to call it, Bad Guy Michonne. We're releasing as a premium product. You have to get it at the club, club.baldmove.com. Sign up. Now, if you're questioning, like, oh, is this something that I would actually be interested in? Good news. We have in 2 entire seasons of Telltale's Walking Dead playthroughs already If you want to check out our channel, youtube.com/baldmove, you can get all of Bad Guy Lee, which is the first season, and all of Bad Guy Clementine, which is the second season. And, you know, we always strive to make the worst decisions and be the biggest asshole in the game. And we have a lot of fun doing it. It's much more of a lighthearted, poking fun at the universe and game. It's you know what our podcast is like. I think you'll enjoy it. Might be worth a buck to sign up for the club. Anyway, we're going to be playing through that, and we'll have it released this week. Check it out, club.baldmove.com. First up, Daryl Vision. What the fuck?
Is this actually Daryl Vision? Yes. Is it ever established that it's Daryl?
Yeah,
because
you can hear Daryl clearly, Glenn, like, moaning or... and breathing. I mean, it's somebody in that. It's a Michonne Daryl Glenn
right.
Vision.
Right.
But I don't know what point. It happens, like, four times an episode, and it's dumb.
Yeah, it's, I guess, just showing them in captivity, beaten up, like...
being, you know, that you hear some whistle. I mean, it's essentially, I guess, teasing what's going to happen, but you don't know what's going to, I mean...
Well, the whole episode is teasing what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, the build-up starts at the very beginning with this guy getting the shit kicked out of him.
I don't know. It didn't work for me. I thought it was puzzling. You see Morgan wandering around. He passes this cardboard sign that says, "You are alive," and finds a horse with a saddle on it. Probably what the dude in the armor was looking for last episode.
And then tells the horse he's alive.
Who wrote alive? That I sign?
Know. I don't know.
They use the standard Walking Dead, you draw shit on signs font. Mm-hmm. I don't get it.
I feel like they're doing maybe like a Splinter Cell type of thing where they just kind of write the chapter names on a wall somewhere or like in the sky.
Sure.
Like maybe that's Morgan, just "You are alive."
Sure, yeah.
It's not really there.
We have a man with a rosary from the sole survivor from the Carol ambush, following horse tracks, that really muddles. Like, I don't know, why is he following horse tracks?
And does that imply
that
Carol?
Does that imply that Morgan got ahead of him somehow, even though he was behind, way behind?
Wasn't it the dude in the armor that we see later? Weren't
That's
they both
true.
On horses?
Maybe
didn't he like lose his horse?
Maybe he's tracking them, but it
but how does that lead him to Carol?
Well, they're all going in the same place. Like they I thought are? He would. I'm just saying coincidentally. I don't.
I don't feel
massive...
like that lines up because Carol would have to be in between.
You're right.
The horse guy and Rick and Morgan, and they meet in the middle somewhere.
You're right.
Carol should be at one of those points and along the trail.
Honestly, I have a lot of questions about this guy, this rosary guy, as we go along. I'm not ready to get there yet. Carl is getting all geared up to go escort Maggie to the hilltop. They're all going to pile in an RV and go. Enid, who has now got, you know, religion about Alexandria and keeping everyone safe, wants to go with, because why not? Why leave anyone competent behind to guard this place? But Carl refuses because he doesn't want anybody else to die. It's like, I mean, what do you think about Carl just shoving her in a closet and locking the door?
I just wonder when she's going to stop caring about him, because he's treating her like shit at every turn.
Yeah, I kind of thought we were at there a couple episodes back.
Yeah, when they were out by the stumps or whatever.
But man, I don't know that you take any woman, much less one like Enid, and lock her in a closet and be like, "This is what's good for you."
Right.
"I know what's good for you."
Right.
And that goes well.
I can't imagine she's going to be happy when he gets back.
But they really haven't shown her, like, what does she do? She run away from the fucking... I mean...
I don't know. She's got a JSS, man.
Yeah.
She's got
the
JSS.
And that was also, like, pretty low, Carl. Like, unless this is a plot point that Carl's just being a shitbag teenager and fucking around in relationships like they do.
But he seems to... I felt like they were playing it as like, Carl knows what the group needs. And he's going to do what he can to protect them. And, like...
Sure.
This was portrayed as, like, a positive thing for Carl.
Really?
I thought so. I mean, I don't know. Later on, he asks Rick, like, something about...
Yeah, I overheard you. Everything's possible.
I'm not going to let people die. Like, all that kind of stuff. I don't know. It didn't feel like they were particularly casting this as a negative thing.
Yeah, I have an idea that I might talk about in the spoiler section of what they're trying to do here.
Okay.
Typically, it's not great, but it might be what they're trying to do. Rick informs us that Maggie's getting worse, and indeed, we see her, and she looks pretty pale.
Yeah.
And drawn. Abraham, Rosita, and Eugene insist on going with them to the hilltop. Rick tries to talk Eugene out of it, but he will not be Shine. He'll be their anchorman. Yes, he just, like I said last night, he just starts quoting country music lyrics to him. And Rick has got this exasperated, like, how did I lose control of Eugene?
Yeah.
Like, Abraham, okay, I expected I'm not ever going to be able to take that bull by the horns and control him. But fucking Eugene, I can't order him, I can't cow or order him around. What the hell?
Give him an inch, he takes a country mile. 23 of them, to be exact.
Aaron then steps up.
Everyone steps up.
And, like,
up.
The man who you forced to eat applesauce at one point is now going to demand that he is let off the bus. And, okay.
That's fine. Whatever. I mean, if we're really going down this road where everybody abandons Alexandria, let's fucking do
for,
it.
It's insane for one pregnant woman.
I know. It's the most insane thing that they've done yet.
They know they're in a fucking all-out war. If they didn't, they just had a whole bunch of half their other badasses that were off.
And let's get this through our heads. Rick, the leader of this group, who's supposed to be there to protect these people at all costs,
yes,
is going off on some random mission.
Yes.
Why isn't he back at town instead of leaving Gabriel, who we haven't seen can protect himself, let alone this town, in charge of its defense? He should be there running the show. Send Aaron, send somebody who's a scout out to do this mission and stay back with your people.
I mean, Seth Gilliam, to his credit, is really selling this post-apocalyptic preacher routine, or like, I'm kind of buying that he's a badass, even I have zero evidence.
That's the problem. Like, he's conveying it with his tone and his face, but I don't buy it yet. Just don't buy it.
No, it's hard to get the image of the pants shitting betrayal just how craven he's been.
I mean, talk about Carl locking Enid in a closet. He's going to board up the windows on everybody's houses and take off through the back door. Like,
right.
Right. That's who this guy is. Don't leave him in charge.
He promises he'll protect Judith and not fail Rick. And then he says, are you comfortable leaving me with Alexander's defense? That's when the PP time started in for me. Like, no, I'm not comfortable at all.
But Rick is.
Spencer comes in. Spencer's like, hey, you know, could we make a deal with these killers? And Rick's like, oh, Jesus.
I guess if you're taking everybody with you,
yeah,
leaving Gabriel in charge of nobody is fine. Like, how many people can they lose at this point?
Yeah, yeah. And Rick says, well, you tell them to wait. I got a deal for them, which is a badass line.
Yeah.
But man, in retrospect, it seems so arrogant and cocky.
That's the point, right? And, I mean, we're supposed to really buy into Rick is supremely confident.
And that's... I feel like they nailed that part of the comic line, that we were supposed to think that Rick had this under control, and yes, there might be some skirmish, but they were going to win because they always win.
Yeah.
Because these are our people together. They're smarter. They're better at killing. They will always prevail. And this is kind of the first time where that superiority is well and truly shattered.
Yeah, and they did a great job. I mean, hats off to Andrew Lincoln for really...
Yeah,
just conveying the full blown deterioration.
And you can see how he gets, like, right in the midpoint of the episode, he starts to get scared for the first time, and then when he's on his knees, like, there's a little bit of defiance and anger there, but it's
not
mostly
much.
Just like, oh my god, I can't lose any of these people. It's going to be terrible,
and I'm going to.
Yes.
Like, there's nothing I can do about it.
There's nothing I can do. There's too many of them. But you know, halfway in the episode, like, I'm thinking, like, is the plan to just turn it, like, if they'd have turned around at the first roadblock and fall back to Alexandria, how do things turn out differently?
Well, Maggie doesn't get the treatment she needs.
So, right. But,
so she's probably dead.
Like, this is a real Spock going into the reactor at Enterprise situation. Sometimes the good of the many outweigh the good of the few or the
one. Yeah, and I honestly don't know why he doesn't just... take those guys out. They're like, what, seven of them at the very beginning?
Yes.
I'm not sure why he doesn't just destroy this roadblock and drive on through.
I guess because he's thinking that he just doesn't... And I don't think any of us were prepared for the scope of the Saviors. Like,
certainly
unless
not,
you read the comics, the fact that they had this many men and manpower and machine power. Like, as you know, we'll get to there. Morgan finds Carol and she's in bad shape. Simultaneously, intercut through all of this action I've been talking about, there's some nameless guy who gets ran down by a group of what is presumably the saviors. Mm-hmm. He's captured, and this guy, who is a fairly famous character actor whose name I didn't look up, says, "You people don't listen. You wanted to fight us, and now this is how it has to be." And he gets a savage beating, and there's talk of making an example out of him, and he says in between the punches, "For who? All of my people are in the library are dead." And you realize that he's going to be made an example for Rick. But since he's literally a nobody, and we've seen, I mean, it's not like the Rick doesn't understand the saviors at this point.
Yeah.
He just underestimated them.
Right. And ultimately it doesn't serve as, you know, a lesson for Rick. That comes later in the form of the bat. Really it just serves as like a jump scare slash, ooh, like boogie, boogie, boogie sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's the big problem this episode is they took what was a kind of a classic minimalist storyline that rope-a-doped you in the comics, and they just built more. Oh, more, and more. And, like, they already killed Denise. That was the, you know, first message that he failed to get. And they just want to make it bigger and better, and then shit the bed at the end with the reveal. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't have much of a problem with the lead up to this. Like the way that Rick is slowly realizing, oh my God, we're in trouble now.
Okay. Okay.
I kind of like that stuff.
Can we talk about Jason Statham's LG G5 commercial?
If you want to.
Yeah. There's some of these things I just feel like I have to comment on. Like, what is the point that
of
the
being
world,
Jason Statham?
The world became Jason. Yeah, that you get an LG phone and everyone is Jason Statham.
I don't know. Maybe that your life turns into an action hero movie.
I mean, old woman Jason Statham, young woman Jason Statham, Jason Statham riding motorcycle. Yep. Jason, it's crazy.
They're selling a lifestyle.
Jason,
the Jason Statham lifestyle. All absolutely. Right.
All right.
You get this phone, you will have his life.
All right. It's making me want to shave the beard and go to stubble. Anyway, so the RV's trucking down abandoned roads between Alexandria and the hilltop. Maggie's looking increasingly rough. Rick asserts that as long as it's all of us together, that we can do anything. And Morgan, in another scene, is I got some rough transitions here. Morgan's patching Carol up, but he says, "Hey, look, you need stitches and antibiotics or you're going to die. We need to get you back to Alexandria." And she is refusing.
I like how she's kind of, she sees where this conversation's going.
Mm-hmm.
"Oh, you need treatment, Carol."
Mm-hmm.
She rolls her eyes at him.
Right.
Ugh, this again.
Yeah. Abraham rounds a bend and sees a roadblock and says, "What the bitch?" Because there's a small band of saviors. It's like
Abraham, he works best in moderation. And when they try and do too much with him and his one-liners and creative cursing, I start to roll my eyes.
Yeah.
What the bitch was one. He does another one later. And then he has the classic, which is great, the up the shit creek with our mouths open. That one's great.
I feel like they should have a panel of 14-year-old boys. And they should be like, donkey licked. And if they go like, "Oh, badass," or if they just all giggle, like, okay, it's scratch that one off the list. What the bitch? Giggles. You know, up shit creek, neck deep with their mouth open. Yeah. Okay, I mean, that's like, there's got to be an easy way to know what of these crazy ass word salad swears are going to work and what's not.
Yeah. And I also just don't want it overused.
Yeah.
That's the thing that concerns me is they're trying to go too hard with Abraham's.
Yeah.
Abrahamisms.
Yeah. So there's a small band of saviors. There's like six or seven of them. They got this wretch from the intro sequence who's described as someone with a whole lot of someones who didn't listen. And he says, "Here's the deal. Give us all your stuff. We're going to have to kill one of you, but then we can move forward." Rick says, "That deal sucks. I want all your stuff, and I don't think I have to kill any of you." And I kind of like this dialogue because, again, Rick is just like, "Yeah, well, you know, I don't have to kill any of you, any more of you." I thought that was all really good.
Yeah.
And some guy comes and spray paints the guy on the road, which I'm like, surely he's not just, because it looked like he just made two lines, like he's in the middle of a cootie shot or something. Uh-huh. And I remember in the live watch, I'm like, what are they going to do? And then they roll him over, and mm-hmm. I'm like, was that like spray adhesive, and now he's stuck to the floor, and or the road, and they're going to dare Rick to, is this like some kind of crazy morality play?
Yeah.
No, they just sprayed paint a red X on him. Like, what the fuck?
Right. That's part of the lesson, I guess, but the lesson doesn't really pay off until the very end.
No.
With the bat, not with this X guy.
Again, one too many layers on this parfait.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know
why he doesn't kill him.
They could have taken him.
Yeah,
easily. I don't know if that fucks up the Savior's plan, because another criticism is, since they made this so fucking elaborate, you start to wonder, how did the Saviors actually pull this off? This is, again, like I've said many times, this is like the Joker in The Dark Knight Returns. Like, how did he know that the helicopters were going to go down this street and the Batmobile is going to do this? And that, you know, like, did he have, like, every fucking street in Gotham with garbage trucks with RPGs or what?
Yeah.
Did Negan have every single county road in suddenly rural, suburban Washington DC area, like, logged and mined and
right? It's an even bigger problem because the same people are showing up in multiple locations, which implies that they know the exact route they're going to take.
Yeah, not always, but they're leapfrogging, right. and maybe they got radios and they got effective scouts, so maybe they're you know, orchestrating all this stuff. But some stuff, like the logging thing, you know, they must have known they had to go down this this road, and it's not clear to me how exactly they made all these connections work. And again, if you want to make something bigger and better and more badass, that's fine, but you can't do it to the point where your audience is scratching your head and like, okay, how is this happening?
Yeah.
Okay, there's also a nice line about, you know, hey, do you want this to be the last day on Earth? And the other guy responds, hey, it's a good point. Maybe you should be extra nice to those people in the RV, which is kind of chilling, and it gets progressively more chilling as he continues to bring that up throughout the episode. Mm-hmm. More Daryl vision.
Yeah, do you think that line about being nice to specifically the people in the RV is any kind of indication as to who got the bat at the end? Does it need to be one of the people in the RV? Is that what they're hinting at?
Or no, this could it be this anyone? Is cold-blooded smack.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
So, Rick and company are planning an alternate route through a golf course, which I wish we could have seen. I would have loved to have seen the RV driving through a golf course.
Yeah. That'd be fun. Watch out for the sand dunes.
But it's frustrating because I guess you can argue that this serves a plot point of Rick continuing to be cause like, oh, well, we're going to outfox them. Mm-hmm. And they're just so confident. And Eugene's talking on his pseudo military bullshit. And like, all right, they're going to rock. And I also like how nonchalant they are about the walker outside. Like, that's just, the walker slide. I mean, that would have been a reason to shit your pants in season two. And this is just like a nuisance.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, whatever. He'll slap the sides. We'll drive off and we're ready. Morgan explains to Carol that it's not just me that came to get you, Rick. And there's this kind of muddied explanation of, like, other people came too. But then he says, but they didn't come. They left before you got the letter. And I'm like, I don't understand what kind of point you're trying to make. Like, was he trying to point out to, like, hey, only a few people know about this. You can come back and it won't be embarrassing.
I don't know if that's what she's worried about at this point,
right?
Well,
but that's what she came back with. Do you think I'm being dramatic? Like, this is something I'm doing as a cry for attention or help?
Right.
So it implies that that's what he was trying to do.
I guess. Yeah. He's just not... It is weird. The way he's talking to her is patronizing, right? It's like...
Sure.
I'm going to tell you, oh, you need help and you should come back and like... Look, dude, I've made up my fucking mind. You think I did this without thinking about it?
I mean, this goes back to Dale trying to, you know, bully slash convince Andrea to not commit suicide at the...
Right.
At the, she's, what was that, the disease control?
CDC, yeah.
And the other thing that's really frustrating is that it's literally word for word her fucking note. She recites her dialogue, yet it's all the same beats.
Yeah, if you care about people, you will kill. And that's something that Morgan doesn't seem to have gotten through his head. I hope by the end of this episode, when he's forced to kill for the people he cares about, that he will understand what the hell she's talking about. Because if not, that plot line is dead to me.
But this pawn's already dead to me because it doesn't make sense to have. I mean,
okay, it's been borderline for me, but
okay,
no more moralizing.
Right,
he needs to understand the point she's making.
But it's just super frustrating because, and they do lampshade it by having Carol be exasperated. Like, do you really not get it? But again, Morgan's read the letter.
Yeah,
Carol read the letter to a voiceover in us. The two episodes ago, last episode, they all discussed the contents of the letter.
Mm.
And now, this episode, they read it again. Like, Jesus Christ, man. Are they getting paid by the word on this shit?
Yeah.
90-minute episode, Jim. So, Abraham in the RV asks Sasha if she thinks they can make a baby. And, you know...
They're one day into a fucking relationship here, and he's talking about kids? They have a sick... and dying pregnant woman in an RV, and they're talking about kids?
So 20th century Aaron.
There's fucking roadblocks blocking them from saving the sick and dying pregnant woman, and they're talking about fucking kids?
No. 21st century Aaron, you know, living in the real world is like, pump the brakes, kid. But this is a theme for Abraham that he wants it all.
I know.
And he's not going to wait till tomorrow because tomorrow might not come.
But Sasha needs to give him more like the what the fuck dude eyes or something.
I don't know. Maybe she... I don't have any single problem with this because I can see two people freshly in love in a zombie apocalypse acting this way. And that she would find that kind of refreshing that someone's just willing to like, fuck it, YOLO, go for it. Instead of being afraid to live, to just live.
Right.
That's actually going back to a theme with her for going on two seasons.
Uh-huh. And I'm not saying this is bad writing necessarily. What I'm saying is, Jesus, Abraham, you're just really going all out here, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. So as they're talking about the physical act of love and the inevitable consequences if you keep at it enough, they run into another larger roadblock. And they just back away as the saviors are menacingly firing guns in the air at them.
Wasting ammunition when clearly they don't.
That's
don't
like
know
a show
they have
of strength, though, right?
Right, but.
Like, I've got.
Yeah.
Because Rick's thing is like, oh, they're low on ammo, they're using spears. Firing in the gun, I thought, was the same way as, like, some kind of threat display that an animal makes.
Sure.
You know?
Like, or if you're low on ammunition, you want to, like,
yeah,
maybe expend a shitload of it right up front. Like, you know, awe and
shock and awe,
and get them to back down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was effectively intimidating. This whole cat and mouse game, I thought, was pretty intimidating.
Yep. Morgan's wandering and he finds a man who Carol previously mentioned there was a tricky to get at zombie that she just left alone. He will not leave well enough alone, so he climbs up to this antenna tower. It's kind of neat. Guy had hung himself. I did
attracting
have a question.
Walkers too, which was cool.
I did have questions about what kind of person commits suicide, because he's a fresh corpse this far into the zombie apocalypse. And then I started realizing that, no, this is something that I realized on a second watch that this all takes place at the library, where the man from the run, so the saviors, he didn't hang himself,
right.
The saviors strung him up.
I think so.
And like kind of, and I feel like that's, they also alluded to that there's the guy that fired the first shot, that was his punishment. They gibbeted him.
Okay.
And then they rebelled, and then there's this big war. And then, and when you see later scenes, there's like multiple people lined up, like they were shot execution style.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of cool that you're left to put this pieces of the universe together.
Yeah, I always like when they do that. You're left wondering, okay, how do I piece this scenario together? They did that at the country club pretty effectively with Daryl and Beth, I thought.
Yeah.
They do pretty well when they don't say as much and they just kind of show you the aftermath of something.
And I'm not sure if it's this scene or the next, because I kind of put it together, but Morgan comes back and finds that Carol has left the nest.
She's pulled a Carl. She's locked him in the closet and taken off.
That's right. She's like, fuck this, I'm out.
Yep.
The group is now a half tank and they're getting a little worried. And Abraham's worried because he now realizes those weren't the same people and they've got numbers. Like, they've got two, three times the numbers that they have in their group. He still talks confident, but his face does say he's worried as they round the bend and there's this fucked up zombie Red Rover chain that the saviors have formed. And
yeah.
Rick says they can't risk just ramming it with the RV because there's no Dale, there's no Glenn.
Yeah, I guess I'd buy that.
Yeah, I would feel like the RV would just plow right through that.
I would think so, but...
But you smash a
radiator. I'm not certain about it, right.
What are you going to do?
When you're stranded on the road with a dying woman, like, and none of that's good.
Yeah, and you know, obviously people set this as... That's the thing, like, I don't know why they just don't back up and go away, because my first thought is this is going to be an ambush, and this is the most ludicrous thing, one of the most ludicrous things in the episode. The Saviors doing this, firing, like, God, they... This is the Terminus all over again. Hurting people by shooting at their feet. And at one point, yeah, they shoot the hatchet out of Rick's hand. Like, get the fuck out of here with this bullshit.
It's remarkable that they didn't hit anyone.
Yeah. No,
I mean, full automatic at someone's feet, you're going to hit something.
Yes.
I can't believe no one got shot.
No, and it's dumb, and I wish they would stop doing it. None of this shit happens in the comics, so whatever.
I really love that walker with the rotted walker with the chain kind of pulling through his skin. Yeah, ugh. That was disgusting. And I thought, I couldn't tell if that was like, so he rotted while he was in the chain, and the chain pulled through him from the force of the other walkers, or if that was like... Because it looks like it goes mostly through his stomach, which is distended, yeah, and you can see that, like, maybe he got killed and he bloated up and his stomach kind of pushed through the chain. Maybe a little of both.
Yeah, I don't know.
Either way, really effective. Good job, Nicotero, on those effects.
So Rick hacks the zombie chain in half, and they all kind of fall to the wayside for some reason, and they're piled back into the RV and they get out.
Well, Rick specifically like grabs one at the lead of the chain and pulls him to the side of the road and then kicks him in the knees so he drops down and kind of holds the chain there. And then Sasha, I think, gets zombie kill of the week with the triple headshot. I mean, she just and like all the zombies
go down.
What is
like shooting fish in a it's like zombies it on is, the line, yeah, fish in a barrel.
But she lined him up. It took some skill.
Sure.
She gets it.
Sure. No shooting at feet for her.
No.
Also, first time all season, a convincing dusk scene.
Oh,
we
my
have a,
God.
We have a fully believable transition from day to night. I didn't know they could do it. I didn't know they could do it, but they did.
I noticed Aaron looking through the scope of his gun while they're on the road.
Yeah.
Like 10 feet into the distance into the woods. I don't know what he's thinking there. Is that the world's least powerful scope?
I don't know.
Does he have it on backwards? And he's like,
you know, they did do that in one of those seasons.
Oh, God.
They actually mounted a scope backwards.
On purpose or accident?
No, it had to be accidental. Okay. Like, just the prop guy fucked up. Huh. Anyway, Rick realizes, because of the ease, as he pulls the Princess Leia corollary, that this escape was too easy.
Right.
There's something afoot. And they're running out of gas. Maggie's running out of time, because now it's like she just keeps getting paler and sweatier, and she's running a fever. And Rick, for the very first time in a long time, is looking scared. And they hit roadblock number 4, where there's this huge 20-30 man group with wreckage all piled up. And he tells Abraham to go back, and Abraham's like, where?
Yeah.
Time's running out for the group. Carol's creeping around in whatever library town she's at. She's closing dumpsters on zombies. Zombie chick jumps her. Carol grabs her hair and literally pulls her face right off the skull.
Amazing.
Just a great practical effect. It's one of those things that, like, very few times the Walking Dead can get the face out of me. It got the face out of me last night. This rosary guy jumps her. And my question is, why? Why is he doing this? He had a perfectly functional car. I said that last episode, that there's better lead to something interesting. And he's just a fucking plot device. He's a plot device to get Morgan to shoot a motherfucker.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Because the smart thing to do when you're shot in the zombie apocalypse is, I don't know, go back to your town where you can get some healing.
Yeah, especially now we know how large and well-equipped this, and maybe report back that to Negan, the guy who, I guess you could meta-explain that now that we know Negan's such a crazy guy, that if you reported back that everyone got waylaid by a single woman with a submachine gun sewn in her Carhartt inexplicably, that he would just baseball bat you to death. But still, he's like, I'm going to die anyway, even though I could have gotten my car and not died, and I just want to watch you slowly die, and then I'm going to get bummed about it and threaten to walk off, and then it's just, it's dumb.
Yeah, no, I mean, you hit it. It's a plot device.
You can hear the click-clack of the keyboards in all these scenes, and it's really dumb. Anyway, So he shoots her in her arm. He begins the torture game. We get more Daryl O'Vision. Rick lies to Maggie about how well they're doing. Just bald-faced lies. Oh, yeah, there was gunfire, but we got through them saviors, and we're well on the way to Hilltop. And she's like, well, we left it in this daytime, and now it's dark, which could be in 5 seconds in this universe. But I saw the sun setting, so it's been a minute, Rick. You're lying. Why?
Yeah.
Carol laughs at the guy that is killing her because this is what she wants. I feel like
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, it's interesting because if this was what she really wanted, she could have just let the saviors
do her in. I guess it's not what she wants, but now that it's happening, it's like, well, it's happening.
And also the saviors, I guess now that I think about it, they weren't going to kill her. They were going to do something with her.
That's true. They were going to take her back and use her to get into Alexandria.
Or, you know, like...
That's what
like,
they said.
Carol's
anyway.
Fine with dying, but I don't think she wants to be raped. I don't think she wants to be used as a pawn in their fucking bullshit hostage games.
Sure.
So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and ultimately it's the thing where she doesn't want to hurt the people that she loves, right? And she thinks that... That's going to happen if she's taken back and used as a ransom.
I also thought, you know, I'm quick to praise Melissa McBride. You all know this. But I thought her weird performance while she's slowly bleeding out and dying was strange.
Okay.
Like, just this weird, croaky kind of sing-song, almost girly routine she was pulling. I didn't understand it.
I didn't even notice it.
Okay, well, then we'll move. So the guy, she argues, like, well, fine, I'll be happy, and I'm smiling because I'm going to die, and this I'll be checked out of this world. And so he gets disappointed and decides he's going to walk off for some reason. But then she goads him into coming back to finish the job, because that's what she wants, and he fucking listens to her. But Morgan stops him with a gun, no less.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells him to drop the gun. The guy says no, goes to finish off Morgan. And I'll say this about Morgan. When he decides to kill, the man commits.
Yeah, 5 shots? I mean,
yeah.
One of them a headshot?
He
definitely killed that man.
Yes.
No doubt about it.
His life, not as sacred as Carol's, he finally decided.
Right. So, I mean, this is where, you know, his idea of I can't kill and the idea that Carol has of you have to kill at some point to save the people you love come right up against each other and bash heads.
Do you think that this is... I don't feel like that this... That's the thing. Like, I don't think this is an evolution. I think that this is what he would do if he knew that someone is going to die. He would kill to save their life. But as long as it's theoretical, and his definition of theoretical is a lot, you know, loosier-goosier than mine is, but like... Unless there's a direct causality, like there's a guy with a finger on the trigger, gun to hit, I can kill then, but if it's like an easily envisioned consequence of my actions, who's to say?
I can't think of a specific instance to refute that, but I think that's just headcanon you've got going. There's nothing on screen to show us that that's the case, right?
You're right.
In every opportunity he's had, he said, all life is sacred.
But never been this kind of ticking time bomb scenario where he had to act. It's always been he was off one-on-one with a group of saviors. Now, you could easily argue that they're not saviors, wolves.
Mm-hmm.
You could easily argue that they kill him and they just run and go rampage and kill other people in the town. Or he lets them go and, you know, just like it happened with Rick. We saw it. So I don't know. You're right. I'm probably trying to justify this in my head. Carol says, would you just please let me go at this point? And we made jokes about, like, this is actually transcripts from Melissa McBride's contract renewal. like, why are you doing this? Just let me go. Two guys on horseback. Actually, one guy on horseback, one guy on foot. One of them we're left to believe, even though I didn't get a good look at his face last episode, is from the previous episode since he's familiar with Morgan and Morgan seems to recognize him.
So, and, you know, there's one guy on horseback here.
Yes.
I don't know why you'd put a guy on horseback, one on foot. That kind of slows you down.
And that horse wasn't just running wild. He had, you know, bridle and saddle.
Sure, and that's the same as the one Morgan found. So we're pretty sure this is a guy who ran away from the barn because he got jumped by Morgan and Rick a few episodes ago.
Yep. And I think this is cool.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, I'm all about dudes in full armor riding horseback with lances. That scene, I want to know more about what crazy world they're from.
Yeah, and it still, you know, with all the Savior stuff, we could have gone right back into the, oh, we got to kill everybody we see sort of mentality, which, you know, Rick was on for a while and Daryl was on for a while and they've all flip-flopped since. But now it's legitimately still a question. There are people out there who are good.
These guys are from the Jesus School of First Contact.
Yeah, they're going to help you out if they can. Well, they're not going to try and steal your truck and drive it into a river with all the supplies inside. Sure. But they will shake your hand.
Yeah. That's the special Jesus touch. That's
the handshake?
No, the stealing and the running of the rivers.
Right.
So it's the same school of thought. It's just he's in from a more extreme branch. The group then comes up to the fifth roadblock, which is where Abraham...
Can I talk about Jesus for a second real quick? Because it's becoming a lot more apparent given the deal that they have with Negan here at the hilltop and the way that Jesus goes about that first encounter with Brick and Daryl. He's trying to steal these supplies from them. And I get the impression that that's because this 50% thing is putting the hurt on them.
Yeah.
And Negan says it, right? Like, I don't care how you have to do it.
Sure.
You're going to give us 50% of your stuff. If that means you go without, you got to beg, borrow, and steal more.
Sure.
So now it really gives like a retroactive
you're right.
Justification for him trying to steal this truck.
Sure.
Which I liked.
Which is an interesting economy. It's a beggar-thief economy. That like you could literally have Alexandria stealing from the hilltop. And then so like it doesn't seem sustainable what Negan's trying to do.
It seems at the very least limiting to the people outside of Negan's core group, right?
Yeah.
Like he'll prosper, he'll flourish. Because he's getting presumably way more than he can use.
It's kind of like the locusts and the ants. Like if the locusts take over and starve the ants out, well then the locusts are going to have to tend farms, and that's not fun. Uh-huh. Like you gotta do some animal husbandry here. Like you can't just be a out and out parasite. Which I don't know. I mean that's the thing. Like Negan seems. I got the impression that he's very smart, and that he wants to find that balance of pushing him to the breaking point, but not over there. Like he wants him weak and hungry and docile, but he doesn't want him dead.
Right. I mean, this is like, you know, any boss trying to get more productivity out of their workers, right? Like put them in the situation where they need to produce just to preserve themselves, their jobs or their lives. I feel like that is a calculated thing that he's doing, not just like, well, 50% sounds like a good number. Let's take that.
Yeah. And also, I feel like he plays fast and loose with that 50%. Like, he gets to decide what the percent, you know. Like, it's 50%.
Gotcha, yeah.
It might be 2/3 of your stuff, but it's still 50% in Negan math. You know.
Okay. Well, that's the interesting thing, right? Like, so you take 50% of someone's stuff. Like, if they're prosperous, that might not actually hurt the population all that much. Now, if they're just skirting by, taking 50% might kill 50% of the people in that community.
Yeah, Negan's a flat tax proponent.
Right. Right, but so that encourages them to get more, but as they get more and more, like as they steal or beg or borrow more, that 50% goes up. I mean, it stays at 50%, but the amount that he gives them, that they give him is more.
It's like the first dollar you earn is always the most important, right? Because that's always going to get spent. Your millionth dollar is not as important because, you know, you can blow that on hookers and blow. You can blow it on blow. You can buy a yacht. You can invest in, but, you know, it's like that first dollar goes in your belly.
Yeah.
You got to have that. So, yeah, I see what you're saying. So it kind of encouraged, like, is he starting Savior franchises? Like,
it seems like it.
Like,
yeah.
You got to stop being good people. You got to go out. It's like a multi-level marketing scam. Like, you got to go out and rape and pillage.
Talk to your friends and family members. Yes. Get them to buy this bullshit. Yeah. Soap on a rope. Yeah, I don't know.
You're growing crops? No, go out.
Vitamin water. Get in on it.
Yeah. Exactly. So the group comes up to the fifth roadblock, which is this massive pyramid of logs, and Eugene's flipping out because there's like evidence of heavy earth moving equipment, and like these guys just seem like they're really put together. And Abraham asserts that they're neck deep up shit creek with their mouth open. Mr. X, the wretch that got super glued to the road earlier in episode, now gets thrown off a bridge and hung. Aaron says he wants to try to take a shot at the chain. I'm like, get the fuck out of here with that.
Yeah.
What is this? You can't. This. Yeah, whatever.
It's a tough shot.
And as Rick is freaking out, the guys light the logs on fire, and the taunter, is I'm going to call him Mr. Handlebar Mustache, says, you treating your people good, aren't you, Rick? You better get off going where you're going. And it's
says
really
it
creepy.
From nowhere. He's kind of from the woods.
Really creepy. I still think that in final analysis, I could have done with about half of these roadblocks. Same effect.
Really?
Gotten into a 60-minute episode.
I liked how they snowballed, and they kept getting more and more scary and elaborate. And
but the practicality of how. I guess you know the most direct route and the second most direct route. But
yeah,
like,
I'm with you on that, yeah.
And maybe that explains why Negan was so patient about, you know, these first contacts and learning more about them. And like, they know so much more about Rick than he does of them at this point that they can do this kind of predictive stuff. But anyway... Eugene now has a plan, and it's a noble one, that he's going to sacrifice himself potentially by driving the RV as a decoy. It's going to be dark soon, as we can see. It's getting very dusky out, and in the cover of darkness, everyone's going to pile out of the RV, and Eugene's going to lead the saviors on a merry band. Merry chase.
Yeah.
Seems like a reasonable plan.
Sure. Solid plan. I'm glad they grabbed the stretcher. I thought Abraham was just going to Hulk up and carry Maggie in his arms for miles.
No, but doing...
Which I would have bought.
Sure. But doing a litter, that's definitely the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a moment that they're really pushing his Eugene stuff on me a little bit too hard, where he's like, how come you never let me drive the truck? And if I'm Abraham, I'm like, because you fucking shot it, asshole.
That's essentially what he says. I didn't think you could.
You couldn't.
Yeah.
Like,
at that point, he certainly couldn't.
And it's like he's a little bit of like the 6-year-old that wants to do it by himself. And after daddy boosts him up and says, see, I could. I mean, you know, like Abraham says, you're not ready. You need me to protect you. Eugene says, fuck you. I don't. Eugene got stole. Just because you bit a dude's dick doesn't mean that Abraham was wrong in saying you need protection.
Right, especially at the point of truck driving. Like, Eugene didn't come about this because people gave him an opportunity to get hard. Well, he got hard because he had to.
And he explicitly lied to them and intentionally looked weak and pathetic, but knowledgeable, so that they would take him in and do everything for him. So, like, your plan worked, dick.
Right.
Congrats. You're a
he didn't want Abraham to think that he could do these things.
You were a survivor by being a social chameleon and by being a liar.
Yeah.
You weren't a survivor because you were a badass.
Right.
Just because you got a ponytail now does not mean that you get to talk shit to Abraham. But they hug it out.
Yeah.
So that was nice. And I got to say, Bear McCreary really pulled a score out of his ass, because I'm like, I don't really even care much for Eugene other than comic relief. But like, I'm like, wow, Eugene might die. This is like Eugene gonna die music.
Yeah, I definitely felt that. And I actually like the moment between Abraham and Eugene. You know, they've had a very rocky relationship. And I think the idea that Abraham would come to have some respect for Eugene after all the shit he's pulled is a pretty big thing for those two characters. And I got mostly on board with this scene. I liked it.
The other thing is that I thought you could spin it as Abraham just knows that he needs to patronize Eugene, because if he doesn't, you know. Right.
But you give him an inch.
Yeah. Give him an inch.
Oh, man. He's going to be unbearable from now on.
Well, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
He's going to want hugs every day. It's the worst.
I said the last night when we were watching this, like, if Eugene comes at you, do you flinch?
Probably. He's not a small guy.
Well, but I mean, I'm just thinking, like, if it looks like he might get on his knees.
Okay.
If it looks like his knees are buckling, I'm definitely jumping back.
Like, I'm talking to him, my eyes are locked on his knees at all times.
Yes, yes. That's
just looking for the bend, and I'm out.
And that's like when, at the end, when Negan's got him on his knees, do you think Eugene's like, oh, I got you right where I want you?
Right? The perfect time for a dick bite.
Coming a little closer. He just wasn't counting on a baseball bat. Give him the extra reach.
It's true, yeah.
It put him out of biting range. Man, even Fear the Flying Dead episode was disappointing. It's all B-roll from season one.
Yeah.
With
Nick staring up at the plane that flies overhead.
I don't know. This show's its execution, what they think the fans want, and what they think. Like, their marketing team needs to be fucking fired.
Their marketing team is doing a great job.
their sales team. No, their sales team's doing a great job. Their marketing team is shitting the bed.
Their marketing team is. We have some feedback on this. I don't want to get too far into it, but I think their marketing team is doing exactly what they want to do, which is get people talking about the show.
Oh, God.
And it is fucking working. As much as you want to say, like, the feedback is negative and we hate a lot of the shit they're doing. But
every time I've seen this happen a million times, dude, that's burning the candle at both ends.
I know.
That is self-destructive because eventually people will realize they're having the same fucking conversation and move on.
Right. I mean, you can see the trajectories of it, right? Like, The Walking Dead has done this. It's gone on this bell curve where, it shot up in the ratings through the mid-seasons, and now it's getting on in years, and they're pulling this shenanigans with marketing, and it's dropping. Whereas you look at a show like Breaking Bad that just got bigger and bigger as it went, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's because it was solidly written. I mean, Game of Thrones is not getting any fucking smaller.
Sure.
So...
It might. I'm curious about Game of Thrones actually this
year.
Well,
it hasn't happened yet.
Let's see. So they're tromping through the woods. Here's the thing. They're not even tromping through the woods. They're tromping along another road. I realized that on a second watch because my first thought is like, how the hell did the Saviors drive the RV and get... But no, they're clearly in the middle of a road. Why do you... I know you're carrying a pregnant woman, but why don't you just take a beeline through the woods? Through the cover.
It's the only safe route, as far as they know, right? Like, go through the woods.
Yeah, I get it that Eugene, do you really think that they're, like, watching the RV and setting up shop just moments before you arrive there? They've got all these roads blocked off, and even Eugene's smart enough to realize that there's no going back.
Yeah.
Because they've got all of our escape routes covered now, too. Mm-hmm. I just felt like this was... It didn't go down like this in the comics, and I haven't read it in 3 years, but I do remember there wasn't these multiple endless roadblock things. It was maybe one or two, but it made sense because, the noose was tightened before. You didn't have to rely on the characters making stupid decisions to get them where you needed them to be. Whatever, they're there. Carl, in the middle of swearing to uphold his father's promise of being able to do anything, suddenly there's all this whistling. I thought the whistling was creepy and effective. Yeah. We see that they got the RV, and they've got Eugene, and the taunter says, "Welcome to where you're going." Makes them get on their knees. He brings out their gimps, or in this case, Daryl, Michonne, and Glenn from some box.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn's horrified to see Maggie there. And after there's a brief power struggle of how you're going to lower Maggie through the ground, Abraham wants to do it himself. The taunter doesn't give a shit. They introduce Negan as played by Jeffrey Dean Morris, and he is awesome.
Nope, not Morris. Morgan.
Morgan, God damn it. and he's awesome.
Yeah, he fantastic,
like,
performance.
I love his dialogue. Like, it's funny. In a grim way, it's charismatic, it's just great. He looks exactly like I would want Negan to look. Yeah. He acts exactly like I want him to look.
Mm-hmm.
It's not his fault the cinematographer fucked up at the death scene.
So, we had talked about this, knowing once we found out, they're going to go into this Negan plot line, we had talked about kind of the defining trait of Negan, which is, for people who don't watch the comics... And I don't know if you're getting this from the show, but he curses a lot.
Yes.
That's kind of his defining trait. Now, I feel like they may have undermined his ability to be intimidating through his language by kind of making all of the Saviors a clone of him.
Sure.
All of the Saviors come in with this, like, saying shit and saying PG
Palace. They're all PG-13 profane.
Right, right. And that's the other thing that undermines him is all he can say, the worst he can say is shit. And then the rest of it is pee-pee pants time.
Yeah. Shit, bitch, damn, hell.
Right. Typical TV.
Donkey
cursing.
Dick.
So how do you feel, like, now that we're at it and we can talk about his trademark cursing, how do you think they did?
I think it's great. Okay. I don't have a single problem with it.
The only problem I have, and I think, they're doing this as well as they can on cable. The only problem I have with it is they undermined it by not having him stand out enough through his dialogue, because everyone on his side is doing that.
I kind of agree, except for he's doing it so much better. He's like, he's just so much further above the replacement level actor of the standard Savior, and he's so much better.
Yeah.
Just, he's a star.
He is. He's fantastic.
And as soon as I heard that he was being cast and I remembered his iconic role in, as the comedian in The Watchmen, I'm like, oh, this is going to be fucking great. And
it is.
It is. Just, you know, and Lucille looks great. It's all awesome. Like Glenn's outburst and his, you know, correcting of that was all great. It's building up the tension. But then the shit, the decision to make this into a cliffhanger starts fucking the moment up. The second he starts playing Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe. Because then they have to start messing around with his cadence. They got to stop singing. They got to sing. It's cuts, like, who's he pointing at when he's talking to? And where's, like, it's like they're doing all these games and all these bullshit edits.
Yeah.
And then they go first person with the murder. And it's totally lets all the air out of the balloon that they've slowly been inflating over this last 90 minutes. And particularly the last 15. I was, despite myself, like, oh shit. And God, I can only, I'm so glad that you popped my cherry last week on the spoiler section, because man, if I had not known, if I'd have gone in there not knowing that they were going to pull that bullshit, I don't would have climbed the wall.
Okay.
I'd have been so pissed off.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you listened to or you saw the video, like you saw how pissed off I was just with the realization that's what they're going to do. But it did. I'm glad you said that, because, man, I think I would have been in full hate mode. And that seemed, that explains so many fans' reaction, because, you know, how many people percentage wise out of the 15 million people watching this knew that going in?
Yeah, probably not a ton. I don't know. I really hate this cliffhanger. I think it was stupid. It deflates it, like you said, and it takes all of the tension out of the moment and kind of diverts it into the question you shouldn't be asking, which is who got the bat? Should be asking, how are they going to deal with this?
Yes.
Oh no, something tragic just happened to our characters. We know exactly what it is, and how is this going to affect them?
I don't. It's so crazy that they don't understand their own damn show. The drama is not who gets the bat. The drama is everyone's reactions to it and what happens next.
I know.
Like, I could give a shit who gets batted to death. There's some people I would be like more eyebrows raised than others, and more that I would miss than others. But that's not the fucking point, man.
And they're doing the exact same thing, the exact same mistake, and the reason these cliffhangers don't work on the back end when you come back to them, like with Glenn under the dumpster. That moment was supposed to be, oh, fuck, how is he going to get out of this scenario where he's under the dumpster, right?
Yes.
Not, did he survive this?
Yes.
Is Glenn dead? That was not the question we should be asking. So you come back from this in season 7, right?
Yeah.
Where is the tension? Like, where is the emotional impact of seeing who you lost? Because the emotional impact should have been front-loaded. No, should have been the complete package.
And I'm telling you, it's, if you're a diehard fan, did you, and you listen to podcasts and you read the fan sites and you're on the forums, you're going to have this moment spoiled for you, and it's going to suck.
Yeah.
And it's going to have zero emotional impact when it finally happens.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So if you're a hardcore fan, stop being a hardcore fan. Stop watching, listen to podcasts.
Right. Tune out from all their media.
Yep, that's the only way you're going to save yourself from their bullshit tactics.
Yeah.
And that's the opposite of what you want to do.
And even then, you've had a six-month come down from the tension of the moment where you're worried about him killing someone.
I mean,
And now it's like, well, I wonder who he killed.
You beat Michonne's brains out, you beat Glenn's brains out, you beat Maggie's brains out, you beat Daryl's brains out, and Reddit's front page on The Walking Dead is full of, oh my god, my face win, I can't believe they, I'm terrified.
Which is
like,
another hell in its
you
own.
You know, like my tribute to Norman Reed, or whatever, I mean, like, but now it's full of, I can't believe this shit, I'm so, like, AMC, you know, this is, and that someone remixed the, like, you know, Negan leaning in front of Carl's face and like, you know, oh, you think it's bullshit that we're not going to show you who we killed this season? Well, too bad. And like, you're casting the showrunners as the villains of the show. It's a really weird relationship to have with your fans. I don't get it.
And
also,
to me, no one is talking about best episode, best season finale of Walking Dead ever, right? It's all a question, who did they kill? And maybe that's better for getting people talking, but personally, if I were writing the show, I would want the hype of, they just fucking went for it.
Yeah.
And blew our minds with who they killed.
And all this preemptive, oh, this is the best episode ever, is just such a bunch of bullshit. And I don't know. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't agree with that opinion, but I don't know who's saying that. We have a couple of emails.
And like a lot of them went on record saying that this is the best finale. This is the best episode we've done in six seasons.
Yeah, well, like we said, what are they going to say?
Nothing.
Right.
I kind of wonder, for the first time, I've wondered like how much the Gimple and Nicotero's hand and Kirkman's hands are tied by the AMC executive saying, we need you to push this to next season.
Yeah, or I don't know. Like I said earlier, I think the marketing team is doing exactly what AMC wants them to do.
I think it's a mistake.
Even if it's a mistake.
All right, well, I don't want to talk long-term much more because I feel like I'm going to Carol and reread my notes during a lot of this feedback. So I'm going to try to resist that urge. But as, one final thing is, I think if you guys have listened to this half podcast the years, like I've made a lot of difficult, like I've walked back a lot of my criticism of Kirkman. I kind of talked myself into thinking that he sort of expertly handled this situation with who he's going to kill and like all the misinformation he put out and like stuff that I thought was callous towards fans. But like now I feel stupid because maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But if the studio is going to handcuff you and make you do this shit, it doesn't matter because there's no good way to handle this because now the story's out of your hands and it's into the people. They're going to leak. It's into people releasing casting news. If Norman Reedus signs up for a big movie or a big tell, well, you know he's dead, you know.
Sure,
Stephen Young
he goes
signs up for a new HBO series and you know he like it's crazy.
Yep. Bad move. Bad move, writers. So we've got a sponsor to talk about this week, and it's one that you're probably familiar with. It's Harry's. Harry's is a product that I have used for years now.
They make you less hairy, ironically.
Yeah, ironically. But I've really liked using their products a lot. It's brought the cost of my shaving down significantly. Their razors are a lot cheaper than you would buy at a store. And when I say cheaper, I don't mean cheaper. The quality is just as good. I mean less expensive.
Plus other brands, it's like shaving with a baseball bat covered in barbed wire. Sure, you could take that like a champ, but why would you?
Yeah, there's a better option.
Yeah.
It's harrys.com, and right now they've got a promotion going where you can save $5 off your first purchase if you go to their website, harrys.com, and use the promo code BALDMOVE, all caps, one word. They have a starter set called the Truman, which is good, which is what I started with. It's actually a really good deal. It's for $15. You get the razor handle, you get the shave cream, and three of the five blade razor heads. So, I mean, you can probably go to the store and spend $15 on the three razor heads alone if you're buying that other stuff. So go to harrys.com, use the promo code BALDMOVE.
Makes great gift. Father's Day is just 2 months away.
Oh, is it?
If you got an inscrutable elder god like my father that you just never know what to buy for, and he's got a clean-shaven race.
I thought maybe elder gods had, like, stubble or
no,
something.
No, the tentacles. It just grows in thick. And I just said race instead of face because, you know, I'm going with fish breed. And I don't know.
I don't know where you're going.
Yet again, lost myself in a metaphor.
You, listener, should go to harrys.com, use that promo code, BALDMOVE. Okay, are we ready for feedback?
We keep in mind we will have another episode next week, another season in review wrap up. So if we didn't get your email,
right? That's the thing. I got deluged with email.
Or if you've got a fresh hot take, I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of outrage and whatnot. But if you got a fresh hot take, it's not too late to get it in. WatchingDead@baldmove.com or on the forums, forums.baldmove.com. If you just want to,
right? And if I don't include your email on this week's episode, there's a chance I might still include it on next week's because honestly, I didn't even get a chance to read all of the email this week. There was so much.
No, dude, I saw the inbox. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Like, and that's this, these types of episodes like tend to do it. There was 8,000 replies on the post show discussion thread on Reddit.
Holy shit.
So there's a lot of people wanting to talk about this bullshit.
Okay. Well, let's talk about it. We start off with Happy Scott. Happy Scott? Is he still happy after
this? Not so happy now.
Let's find out. I'm on my way to California for the week, listening to the cast on an airplane. Just stoked about the season finale. I've been fascinated about how The Walking Dead will handle it. Then I hear the spoiler section about the fade to black cliffhanger. I don't mind spoilers. I mind shitty writing and bad ideas. Mm-hmm. Now I'm pissed off, and I'm going to have to spend the entire work week and weekend hoping the spoiler isn't the real ending and hoping The Walking Dead is somehow outsmarting everyone. In the future, you guys should add another level of disclaimer, one for standard spoilers and another for spoiling really bad, stupid, crap ideas that no fan would ever want to spend 6.5 days contemplating.
And then what's worse is in the middle of the flight, some Asian lady came over and just slammed his window shut.
Right. And a guy took a wicked shit in the bathroom. Heather also mentioned this. She was actually a little disappointed that we didn't
have an extra
save. Yeah. Have like an extra super secret spoiler section for the really big spoilers. It's something we have done in the past occasionally when we have, like, full synopsis for...
Yeah.
Like, just, like, an outline for the episode.
It's something to keep in mind for next time, I guess. Because, honestly, right. I would have... I kind of would have opted out of knowing that.
No, I sympathize with her. And I guess I would like to apologize for putting such a big spoiler up front. But at the same time, you're in the fucking spoiler section. So I don't feel that bad.
Yeah, yeah, no.
But I get what you're saying, Heather.
We'll take it under advisement. Because like I said, if Jim had said, okay, I got something that might ruin your enjoyment of next week, I might have been like, don't tell me. But I'm glad he did.
Robert Kirkman is writing it.
I'm glad. I'm actually, if I do Captain Hindsight,
yeah.
I'm glad you told me. Because okay. I don't even know how it had gotten through this podcast.
Right.
I was allowed to learn to stop worrying and love The Walking Dead.
Love the bat. Okay, Miranda R. says, I had a thought about why walkers and people are able to sneak up on these characters. And this is something we've talked about, but I feel it's been renewed in Daryl getting snuck up on by Dwight.
Okay.
She says, it is highly probable that our main characters all have hearing loss due to the continuous firing of guns. Gunfire is extremely harmful to unprotected ears, especially in close-quarter spaces,
damn
such
straight.
As a tank or a prison. And that's maybe also why they seem to talk so loudly in the woods and not be aware of how loud they're being. So my question for you guys is, do you think this is the reason the show can get away with so many of the moaning and clumsy walkers sneaking up on people, and also how characters like Dwight are able to sneak up on even the most skilled members of our group? So that is a possibility, but there's one reason I don't think they're going with that, because... if that were the case and these characters had hearing damage, there would be a lot more of, huh? What'd you say? Like going on in conversations.
That would be hilarious if they did do that, though.
It would be pretty realistic, but
because, totally. Rick shooting that .357 and the, you know, the tank. Was it that? Yeah. Or is it the soldier's sidearm in a tank?
It was something in the
anyway,
tank.
Anyway, he shoots that and then like all the concrete tunnels and
shotguns going off near your head.
Yeah. He'd be like, you know, midlife Beethoven at this point.
Yeah. Nick says, when I saw the flashback this episode, when I saw the flashback with Morgan episode, Here's Not Here, I thought it was one of, if not the most important episodes for the story arc of the entire season. Plagued by horrendous timing within the season, not enough clarification, and Morgan failing to pass his message along, the spirit of the episode was easily lost, but they hit on something very, very important. Human beings were not made to kill other human beings. Takes a terrible toll on people emotionally and makes them do horrible things. We've seen this time and time again on the series with our group being able to pull through and find their better side. Many of the characters on the show have probably suffered PTSD or a serious mental issue at some point or another. Some in the series have learned to cope with the apocalypse better than others. Groups like the Wolves, Terminus, or even the Saviors have gone over the edge and let the violence consume them, becoming the antithesis of our group and forming unsustainable human civilization. This is why I think Morgan's story arc matters. The group must find some way to keep their own people sane and expand that to outsiders if they're going to bring new people into Alexandria. I'm not advocating them to perform Zumba and play in drum circles, but they need to do something. Going over the edge has been a recurring theme on the show, and it seems like something which could shape post-apocalyptic civilization for further seasons. I don't know how much we can talk about this, but with what we've seen of Negan's group not wanting to kill... our group, Alexandrians.
Mm-hmm.
How does this play into what you think we might know about Negan's group? Like this idea, because he's assuming here that the Saviors are bad people and they've gone over the edge. But in my opinion, they're responding to Rick's actions.
Well, then that's a little bit hard for me to swallow. Like the fact that they're so careful with Rick's life, they're only going to kill one of them.
Right.
When you see the library was decimated, well, not decimated, it was destroyed because one guy shot at him. That doesn't seem internally consistent. And my big argument with this, the gentleman writing us, is that literally once a season we get an email saying the same thing.
I know, yeah.
And I'm like, so yeah, it's like, is it that important if we've dealt with it in arguably, like, you know, we're on season 6, so in real showtime, that's like season 14 because of all the half seasons, all that crap. Is it really necessary to keep making that? Or if you want to make a serious point about PTSD, then and maybe they're finally doing it with Carol, like someone that's like, you know, when Rick's had his rage outs and it's always been kind of cool and, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, Rick's being a badass. Like, if you want to make a legit point about people being traumatized or how to avoid being traumatized, you can do that. But I don't think the way the show's doing it, it's like, it's almost like the way they're using it now, it's like a cloak. Like, I can excuse any weird character things because these people are all traumatized and it's PTSD and they're all having psychotic breaks and who knows. But that starts to sound like, when you don't take it seriously, like excuses for lazy storytelling.
Okay.
Like, anything can happen because it's the zombie apocalypse. You know, any strange behavior, any out-of-character behavior, anything that would, like, I don't think Rick would act that way could be excused as, well, he's traumatized. Mm-hmm. That might be true. But like I always say, I don't watch drama for super realistic depictions. I watch it for entertainment value.
Yeah. Yeah, it I don't know. It's also interesting to me the idea that Negan can kind of control people that are kind of nasty. I mean, what we've seen of the Saviors, they're pretty nasty people.
Yeah, like how does a warlord rule a bunch of people who are kind of savage warlords in their own right? Like,
right.
You got a baseball bat, great. You know, it could be, I mean, there is some interesting sociological explanations. Like, things you're willing to kill people brutally, and most people aren't.
Like, sure.
Even big, tough dudes have a hard time just, like, you know, beating someone's head to pulp. Like, mm-hmm. if you're willing to do that and inspire that necessary fear.
This is a problem I've always had with the Klingon ethos the Klingon politics. Yeah, is
kill your way to the top.
If you kill your way to the top, you're going to be dead once you get to the top, immediately.
It's the Sith, right? You have inevitable yet sudden betrayal.
Yeah.
But that's real. Like, that's like, you know, if you're in any kind of crime syndicate.
Right.
Like, I know that's a trope on TV, but I feel like that's kind of how things really work.
I guess that organization might be able to proliferate, but yeah. There's going to be a lot of turn.
High turnover rate.
Yeah.
And I don't think, like, the thing that is dramatized in the TV shows, it's usually not people dying. It's usually people getting arrested.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And taken out that way. But, yeah, there's got to be, you know, I don't know. It's a dog-eat-dog world out there. All that's left is cats.
I just wonder how Negan keeps it all under control, but we might find out next season. Natasha from the Unspoiled podcast says, in last episode, Aaron is wondering aloud, why do they do this? I think she's talking about the cliffhanger mm-hmm. from this episode. She says, I think I can tell you why. This is a show that doesn't care about legacy, about telling a real story, about longevity, or a sustainable plot. This is a show that gets its lifeblood from the ups and downs of Twitter reactions and Facebook comments and the masturbatory idiocy of a follow-up show about itself that airs right afterward.
What are we? We're
not talking about ourselves. We're not talking about our own show. Like, if we came on and did an after show for the Watching Dead podcast, I think we would fall into that.
We're the guys jerking off, watching the other guys jerk off, I guess.
Yeah, which is perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, that's something humans engage in. We have PTSD. We're traumatized by watching the show for 6 seasons. Get off our back.
She goes on, they don't care if you believe that Daryl is dead. They care that you tweet about the fact that you don't believe it. They want to ride the wave of free publicity and pop culture pulse because keeping the show at the forefront of conversation, whether that conversation is good or bad, is what they rely on. There's a certain amount of ingenious manipulation with the way it's written. Keep the amazing episodes just frequent enough that people keep watching, but don't bother putting that much effort into the plot because they need that energy to jerk off on social media or something. Basically, it's just like Jeff Winger said on Community, the funny thing about being smart is that you can get through most of life without ever having to do any hard work.
Yeah.
They're letting their fans do all the work for them. So, and then she goes on to say she decided she's quitting her Walking Dead podcast.
Wow.
She posted it on Facebook the other day. So
I will be, because that's the thing. Like, I'm making a point to listen to a lot of Walking Dead cast this week.
Okay.
Because I've got pretty reliable barometer on who is kind of the kinder, gentler ones, who are the go for the throat casts, and I kind of wondered if this would be the breaking point for some of them, but
apparently it was for
Natasha. I can totally understand. And Alan Sepinwall gleefully noped out of it this week.
Yeah.
But
that's an interesting point to raise. Like, you know, the old slogan, no publicity is bad publicity. That be true if you get your audience talking about your show one way or another?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like that no publicity good is there's no such thing as bad publicity. It's only true if you skillfully react to the bad publicity.
Okay.
And use that to change the conversation to something you honestly want to talk about. If you're just getting bad publicity all the time, that's not good. And I guess where I would disagree with Natasha here is when she says it's a genius move, because I feel like it's ultimately, yes, people like reacting about Daryl getting killed or Glenn getting killed or whatever, but reacting, there's nothing to react here. Someone died, who?
Right.
That's not that interesting a question. Which makes me think that I think the marketing people really don't know what they're doing. They think they know what they're doing, and they're blindly going after that, but they don't understand. They really don't understand the fan base and what makes them tick. At least the hardcore.
Or they do. I mean, they lean into the shipper stuff. They lean into a lot of that, the stuff that makes these kind of shows tick. These, you know, I don't know, soap opera light shows.
Yeah.
Where they're just doing the same thing over and over again and shocking you for the sake of shocking you. And
so there's this like kind of pseudo-intellectual football guy, Greg Easterbrook, that used to do a Tuesday Morning Quarterback column. And when he was discussing like the scandal du jour with the NFL, and there's been a lot of late, he'd always say the thing that the NFL doesn't realize is that there's no immutable law that you always have to be popular. Like, you have to kind of prune your bushes. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing with this metaphor.
Okay.
You have to steer your ship in a certain direction if you want to maintain relevancy in a pop culture.
It's not just going
to
happen.
It's not just like you are not on the goddamn Titanic, and even if you were, look what happened to that. Okay. I'm swinging. I'm swinging for the metaphorical fences here. What I'm saying is,
what is his point?
His point is, like, just because you're popular today and you're this juggernaut that's making billions and billions of dollars and millions of people, the most popular sport on the planet,
right,
doesn't mean tomorrow, if you continue to let this bullshit happen, that you will be. And I feel like that's the Walking Dead in a nutshell. They think, because they're the hottest thing on Sunday night with tens of millions of people watching them, that it will always be that way. Not, how are people going to eat our lunch?
Yeah.
And if we do this Pavlovian reaction to our fan base, when do they stop salivating when we ring the bell? And then when that happens, what do we do? Like, if you're relying on tricks and no substance, you have to have enough substance to bring people back, because the tricks, people get burnt out on that. You know?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I would much rather watch a show with solid storytelling than gimmicks that try to keep me coming back next week to find out what happened next.
And like, now they're like, it feels like the gimmicks are now like one step even removed, where it's not jerking us around the who's going to die and all that stuff, but literally jerking us around on who's going to die.
Okay.
You know, it's not Beth's dead and oh my God, what's Daryl going to, it's who fucking died. I don't even know. Yeah. That's bad storytelling.
All right. Well, Dan from Philly, I think, is going to agree with you. He says, that was probably the series finale for me. When you take something that should make your heart ache and turn it into a Who Shot JR piece of garbage, then the show becomes the epitome of bad 80s melodrama.
Yeah.
I could write paragraphs detailing what I think sucked about the season, but it's all been done to death. Even from a business standpoint, this ending makes no financial sense. The only reason to buy the Blu-ray of a horrible season would be for that that closure of a knockout ending, but they managed to screw that up too. Typical. He has another question, but I wanted to address this point, first of all. So, that's interesting, because obviously you remember Who Shot JR. Mm-hmm. That was a big thing that got everybody talking, good or bad. Like, that created a buzz, right?
But it's also a shark jumping moment.
Right. So this is before my time. Did that kill the show? Is that a thing that like people noped out on?
Probably no. That represented the peak because I know that that whole plot line got walked back because it was all a dream sequence, and then it well and truly jumped the shark. But I don't think Dallas trajectory is where you want to be on.
Okay,
that'd be like saying, this is the X-Files movie moment.
Yeah,
that means you're at the precipice of a cliff that you're about to fall off.
Hmm.
Late season Lost, where what's fine about the origin of Jack's tattoos. Well,
there was so much in Lost that did keep me coming back, and I don't know if I've just moved beyond that or if there was something different about it, but like when Benjamin Linus is introduced,
mm-hmm.
you're like, oh, who is this guy? Where is he from? And there was so many cliffhangers around him and the others. And
sure.
Like,
but
all
but
these
I'm
things.
Trying to think the fundamental difference between like the Hatch.
Uh-huh.
The Hatch came at the end of season one, which had been a stellar season. And that was a really interesting episode. And it was opening up a door for a new mystery. Like, oh,
right.
Where is this going to go next season?
What's in the hatch?
A main cast member dying in first-person perspective and you don't know who it is not... That's an artificial mystery. It's not... Like, Rick...
Yeah, you're
Rick
right.
is not wondering, what the hell is this hatch? Michonne is not wondering, what the hell is this hatch? Carl is not wondering... Like, someone's brains are leaking out on the ground and everyone knows it but us. But the audience.
Okay.
That's crazy.
Their next email is directly related to this, so I'm going to go to it. Ciara says, just finished the Walking Dead season finale, and I feel cheated. We were led on an emotional roller coaster. The last 5 minutes, my heart was beating so hard, and I had anxiety that I hadn't felt in years watching this show.
Sure.
All to be left on a cliffhanger? Are they serious? Way to piss off everyone. I was almost to the point of tears. Watch 5 minutes of The Talking Dead to hear their silly explanation of, well, we didn't show it because whoever it was, that starts a new story.
What the
right,
fuck?
Right. And she goes on, that's crap. And Jay also wrote in with this, and I wanted to give him credit too. But
it's preposterous.
It would have been way more effective to show the person, the victim, and everyone's reactions than fade to black. And then maybe the saddest line in this entire email, I will be back in October, but holy hell.
Well, you know, that's the one thing, like, talking all about what they're doing to the fan base, like, you know, we're hitched. Because, like, even though I'm coming back from October, I know for a fact there will be a lot of people that this is the final straw.
Right.
So, you know, at what point does, you know, I guess, like, it'd be a sad day if we hang up our shop here before the Walking Dead actually is over. I don't want to do that, but at some point there'll be a combination of both of us being pissed off, lack of interest, and dwindling fan support, and it'll probably happen.
If it doesn't, it's almost a shame.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how many times you can fuck up like this and just keep
coming
back.
And that's the thing,
back.
Man. These are so easily avoidable. Like this, they were really on the cusp of having something special here at this back season, going into one of the most memorable moments of the show, going into one of the most memorable storylines, some of the most interesting stuff, and they just fuck it up voluntarily. It was right there.
And I don't consider this a spoiler, but if you're super sensitive to comic spoilers, check out for like 30 seconds, because I want to talk about...
I reserve the right to edit
how they did this in the comic.
Okay.
In the comic, they just fucking show it.
Yeah.
They don't waste time with this, come back next issue to see who the fuck was killed.
They beat somebody's brains out.
They show you dragging him up. They show you beating him. They show the aftermath. Done, and then the comic ends, right?
Yes,
that's how you do it. That leaves people stunned and in shock.
I can vouch that there's not been very many moments where I was shaken. Like Game of Thrones did it to me once, where I had to like put the thing down for a couple weeks and like fuck. But yes,
it makes me wonder like where the blame goes for this, because does Kirkman, I know he likes to remix and he says he made mistakes in the comic and he'd like to do things different. Is this one of those moments, or is this a moment where this worked in the comic, it's iconic, let's do it, and they say no?
I got the impression from The Talking Dead and the demeanor of the gentleman that it felt like they were having to take even though that was a puff piece and there wasn't any tough questions, I don't feel like they liked what happened.
Do you think maybe that's because of the aftermath of the Glenn stuff and they were just worried, or was that
I feel like the day if they were given free creative hand would have just shown it, because they're, I mean, whatever you think of Kirkman and Gimple as storytellers, they are storytellers, and you got to know that's a worse way to tell the story. It is entirely to do...
I would hope so.
It's entirely to get... I don't think these people are stupid, and it's entirely to get a reaction out of a fan base. I don't know. Like, I feel a little sorry for him. I feel a little sorry for him.
Okay.
As sorry as I can feel for rich millionaires.
As sorry as I can feel not knowing who made the calls, not knowing whose decision this was, right? Because it's quite possible that Kirkman was like, yeah, I don't want to do what I did in the comic, and this is much better, much more effective. And everyone was like, I don't know, dude, but okay. I don't know. I don't know where the blame lies here.
The other thing is, put aside the fact that, like, you're going to get spoiled if you're a hardcore fan. And you're going to have that emotional reaction stolen from you by fucking AMC's marketing department.
Right.
Put aside that. Structurally, opening up the next season with someone getting beat to death definitively, the first episode or two has to be an anticlimax. There's nothing, I mean, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're expecting people to regroup and, like, but now you're kind of, like, I guess looking for, there's already been a lot of jokes on the Reddit and on the forums, like, oh, now we're going to go off for three episodes and find out about the Horse Lords with Carol and Moore. And, like, if they do that.
Or there's a suggestion in our email section here that they jump back for the Saviors and we see some of the origin stories of, like, the Alicia Witt character and, like, all these characters that have been killed off.
The Governor arc for fucking real.
That's exactly what I was thinking of, is three episodes of fucking Governor that we all hated. There's no way they'll do that, right?
I mean, if they do that, like, I guess, like, who's watching to find out who got beat at that point? You're watching despite it. You're watching, you're like, oh, God, I'm still interested in the story. I want to find out what happens next. But, Jesus, can we just put this behind us?
But this is a pattern with this show. I mean, they did it with Morgan
last
season.
This is by far the worst.
With Glenn in the dumpster. Yep. They did a three-episode run where we didn't find a fucking thing out about it.
Yep.
Everyone hated that. Don't do that again. And it seems like that's what they're setting up.
Yeah.
Because coming back straight into this scene and just showing who got hit... doesn't,
and you can see some asshole social media manager AMC saying, see, I told you, everyone's talking about
it. 60,000 tweets in an hour,
not knowing that they're burning through goodwill, like they're just it's like they're setting money on fire. Look how much money we've got, we can just burn it. Like, you earn it back, motherfucker. Let's see you try.
I did want to go back briefly to Dan from Philly's other question. He says, hey guys, forgot to mention in my feedback email, what happened to the fucking RPG? One shot at the Saviors on the checkpoint and they could have taken out 50 of them. Why would you leave your most powerful weapon that you know can do all kinds of damage at Alexandria
with a bunch of people who can't shoot
straight to begin with?
That would have fucked up their plan pretty nicely if you just put an RPG in the middle of those 30 guys.
How could they ever guess that they'd have an RPG?
You just, Rick just steps out and he has Abraham behind him. I mean...
I'd have somebody surfing the top of the RV with the RPG ready to go.
But no, that's a fucking unanswerable question. Wow.
Defense.
That's a game breaker.
Like, that's all I can think is, you know what? If the shit hits a fan at Alexandria, let's have an RPG backup. Maybe. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, those one RPG to those roadblocks and they're done.
And they have multiple rounds with only one launcher, so maybe it is for last-ditch defense.
I guess. But that didn't seem to be part of the plan. One thing we didn't talk about in this episode is they had a fucking plan. Like, yeah. Gabriel goes up and he outlines, like, look, we've got escape routes. We've got fallback points.
I started to make that point, but then I got distracted. Yes, I had that. Yes.
So kudos on that.
Now, but here's the thing. Next episode, or like in next season, when Alexander gets overrun and they're all running around at chickens with their heads cut off.
Right.
I guarantee we're going to be like, where's your fucking plan, Gabriel? Because you know they're going to forget about that.
Yeah, they might. They might. Let's go to some visual effects stuff, because we've talked about, like, the episode where the blood splatter kind of hit the camera.
Uh-huh.
We did a little bit of that. Tom from Detroit says, the cliffhanger was a move that you see from a desperate show trying to save itself, and the first person point of view with blood dripping was the cheapest effect I've ever seen on television, and I used to watch MST3K.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It didn't look good even.
No.
I don't know what they're doing. Their visual effects are not as good as their physical effects. Sorry.
And I don't know why. Well, for it's hard to pull off a first person shot of someone getting their brains beat in.
I guess. I mean, all you got to do is
like they go
make
hardcore,
a convincing blood drop.
Yeah, but it's going to look cheesy because that's.
I mean, if you
can that's not how it looks. Like if you're getting your head beat in, I guarantee that's not what it looks like from your point of view.
Yeah, you get hit in the eyes with blood. You're gonna squint. You're gonna close your eyes. You're not gonna see anything.
I mean, like I said, they really fuck. I mean, and the way they chose to shot it, like I don't know if they're going to just show us again from a third person perspective, like when they finally get around to doing it. Mm-hmm. But man, I feel like there was a lot of. I mean, it wasn't just that someone got beat to death. It's so sickening. There was a lot to it. Like that taking it like a champ is a real moment in the fucking comics. And it's just a like throw off line that you might not even hear because they got the echo effect. I mean, it's just man, what a
you think
they're
you think they're
going to
rewind about 2 minutes on this thing?
I have no idea.
From season 7.
I mean,
and show us the scene again, but this time not from the POV.
You're asking me like if I was The Walking Dead, what would I do?
How do you salvage this?
I don't know.
If you're A. Ron Hubbard and you're in the writer's room, they say, you know what, Gimple, you're out.
Because
Kirkman,
with
you're
Glenn,
out.
They
A-Ron,
didn't
you're
really.
In.
They didn't really. They're just like he wiggled out from underneath it, and life goes on.
Right.
Which if they do that with this, you've just thrown away one of the best moments in the comics.
Yeah, I don't know how I'd salvage this either. I wouldn't have done it like that in the first place, but that's just me. Okay, Jesse B says, yes, the ending of the finale is awful, but do you think that AMC could do anything further to miss the mark regarding the conclusion in the season 7 premiere? And we've kind of hinted on this, but. I want to talk a little bit more about it.
Are we saying how could we make it worse?
Right. Do you think that the creative team might try to set up Negan's backstory in early episodes of the next season, similar to how they wrote the Governor's storyline? We kind of talked about that already. Sorry, got ahead of you there, Jesse. What will your reaction be if no major character died? Of the lineup, Aaron was the character that had the least development and pretty inconsequential to the season as a whole. If it's revealed that he was Negan's victim... Do you think that would be a good cop out, or do you think that would be a cop out?
What if he beats the brains out of Dwight for letting his dick get bit?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess that would be the most farcical, or the taunter, like he just does something crazy, just beats one of his own men to death, like the you know,
yeah, mustache man, whatever.
Because that's like the tropiest thing. You think the big bad's going to kill one of the heroes, and he turns and executes his lieutenant.
Yeah, it's.
It's like
I don't know. I honestly, if it doesn't matter who they kill at this point, it's already done.
It's
for
the
me.
Bell,
it's like,
you know, not to sound like Lex fucking Luthor from Batman vs Superman, but the bell has been rung. You can't unring it. Like, and it's been rung. That's the thing. Like, this stuff is all additive. The thing with Glenn, the thing with Morgan, the thing with now, who the fuck knows? It erodes on. Like, you can only jerk around a person so much before it's like. Drink more Ovaltine, fuck you. Like, we're all Ralphie, and we're all continually disappointed, and, you know, the show is still so effective despite itself, and it's like, it's just, that's what I've been saying for fucking years. It's so easy for them just to stop doing this shit and make a really compelling show. Like, wait till you see the rate, like, social media, man, wait till you see the ratings when you make a good show consistently. Holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah, and I think, you know, we haven't talked about one other aspect of this that is undermined is you get people talking right now. You get people speculating, who is it? And you get so much speculation and all the angles are explored. Then you can't surprise anybody because everyone has gone over and over and over for 6 months.
Yeah.
No one's surprised. No one's shocked. They're like, yep, called that. Oh, Reddit called that 6 months ago. Where were you then, Walking Dead?
Right.
You take not only the emotional punch out of it, but also the surprise of it out by pushing it off for 6 months.
Yeah. And it's possible to be a dedicated fan of a thing that you probably shouldn't be. Like, it's like my relationship with Destiny. You know, like, I'm genuinely excited for new things that are coming, like, and, but I'm aware that it's weak sauce. Like, they're bringing back an exotics from year one to year two in lieu of new content. And I'm genuinely excited about that, but I know I can't go to you and be like, oh boy, Destiny is the greatest thing ever, because if I so some way got you to play it, you'd be like, this is the same bullshit as last year, I'm out. And I feel like that's where, like, Breaking Bad fans, you gotta see this show. People see the show and like, oh shit, you're right. Walking Dead fans are in a position where, like, are you really going to tell your friends, hey man, Walking Dead's better than it's ever been, you gotta see it, because they're going to get to this and be like, what the fuck are you wasting my time with?
You don't even, like, have that, right? You go to your friends and say, oh, who are they going to kill? And they're like, I don't know, I don't watch the show. And you're like, will it be Glenn? Will it be Daryl?
That's what I'm saying.
Will it,
like,
be Aaron?
Like, it's where it's like,
I don't know what you're talking about, man. I haven't seen the show. Instead of being able to say, they just had the most amazing cliffhanger, or the most amazing season finale.
That's
what
I was getting at. Just like, I can't be a Destiny evangelist. I can still love it, and I do, but I can't tell my friends it's the greatest thing ever, because I don't even believe it. I like playing it, but, like, I can't really justify it. So you don't. Do you so really want to put your fan base in that position? Bungie? I mean, AMC? Yeah. I don't know.
So Brett had some comments about, you know, how this is going to get spoiled over the next 6 months with contract renewals and tweets from cast members and shit like that, which we already went over.
It will.
And he's, 100% sure it will get out.
And the ones that are most fucking hurt by it are the hardcore fans.
Yeah, I agree. So, thanks for that, Brett. I'm going to move on to Brian from Jupiter, Florida. Says, I have a real problem with the show and how it's portraying the saviors. One moment, they are completely incompetent and helpless to stop the slaughter from our group. And the next moment, they have planned out this elaborate rat maze spanning dozens of square miles, all to scare our group. It's obvious that the saviors are only as competent as the plot needs them to be. Also, how can the saviors know the area well enough to block off all the side roads, but not well enough to know about the Alexandria settlement?
Well, so I have less problem with that, because I think they've done a good job of showing that, like, Negan underestimated Rick, didn't know about Rick, and has spent the last few weeks doing the intelligence. They know exactly where Alexander is. They know what their cars look like. They know who goes in and out and what routes they take. And they've been slowly building this noose around them, while Rick, in contrast, and this is something Glenn said last episode, has been more and more confident.
Right.
Because they've won these early skirmishes. It's like, you finally, you know, you kicked a tiger in this ass, and you had no, you didn't even know it had teeth, let alone a plan to come up with dealing with it. So now you got the tiger's teeth, and oh shit, it's got claws too. Fuck. The ass sure was easy to kick, though.
Okay, let's go to something completely different here.
Michelle, Monty Python.
Michelle from California. So many people are pissed off that they didn't, that the show didn't tell us who was on the receiving end of Lucille tonight, but I'm actually part of the minority on this. In my opinion, if you're writing a really good season ender, you need a cliffhanger. It's the nature of television. If we were shown who was beaten and there was no mystery at the end of the episode, what would be the thing that kept you constantly thinking and talking about the show and eager to come back for next season? If they had shown who Negan killed, it would have left you with a gut punch, feeling pissed off and sad for the loss of a beloved character, understandably so, of course, but there would not be the same level of suspense and anxiety that every good cliffhanger needs. In a show of this caliber, you need a what the fuck moment that leaves your jaw on the floor, not one that leaves you saying, okay, well, that happened, what next? Let me finish out this email, because I know we both disagree with this, but I wanted to get different perspective on it. Do I think Kirkman and Gimple get this right every time? Fuck no. Do I think they got it right this time? I personally like this episode, even though I was fearful, anxious, trembling, and felt nauseous the closer we got to the final minutes. Jeffrey Dean Morgan did a really fantastic job in his first appearance as Negan, and the entire cast knocked it out of the park. Baseball bat pun not intended. So, I know that neither of us agree with this. I don't even know if cliffhangers have that much of a place in season finales. Like, well, week to week, it might be okay. Netflix model, I feel like some of that can be okay, when I can just click the button and move on to the next one.
Yeah.
Or in Netflix case, not even click a button.
Sure.
Just do nothing
and
move on.
Sure, just do nothing.
I don't think it works in first run TV shows, and especially not at a season
finale.
And
I just disagree that, you know, I love you, I respect you, Michelle, but I disagree with the thesis that what next is not a cliffhanger. You've got Rick on his knees with a vastly superior force that has completely outthought him and outfought him. He won battles, he lost the war. what do they do now?
And I feel like ultimately
they're vassal serfs of this warlord. How do they get out of it? Because the thing is, they don't have the numbers in Alexandria. They don't have the numbers in the hilltop. What are they going to do? That is an interesting,
that's a scary thing. Yeah.
That's an interesting question.
And here's the thing: I ultimately want to be able to identify and be put in the shoes of these characters, right?
Yes.
This does the opposite. This takes me out because these characters see the death. They see who gets hit.
And
they're reacting to it.
You can hear them react, and they're screaming and crying,
and I'm taken out of it. I'm prevented from being in the scene with the characters because I'm literally pulled out of the action by the camera angle. And by this cliffhanger, and I just don't think it works.
Well, again, like,
I want to be a character.
You
I
can
be
like this episode. I like this episode too. I just think the last end is horseshit, and it would have been a lot more effective if they had just shown it, so we can deal with it and we can talk about these questions, like what happens next, which we haven't done. There's a lot of fascinating questions,
right?
That you can't get back there because we're like, you know, straddling these two possibilities. You got Schrodinger's main cast member.
Yeah, there's no way to talk about it.
Yeah.
Until we open the season 7 Blu-rays and we figure it out.
Yeah, like, fuck this. I don't want quantum physics in my Walking Dead, man.
Unless they're really going to go all out.
Sure.
Then I do. Devin from Virginia says, first off, I want to say, I love Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Negan. Now, to be fair, I've not read the comics, so I don't know how accurate or how well he pulled off the character, but I loved him. He was intimidating, yet oddly compelling and charming. I also love the decision to film the Lucille beatdown scene in first-person POV. It was an effective way to shoot something that would have been far too brutal to air on AMC otherwise. Which, I know. We don't have to jump in and disagree on all this stuff. So.
Well, no, that's the thing. Like, I'm not saying that the point of view is what ruined it. If they're like, look, you cannot.
It's that being the end.
You definitely have. You could do this where Negan points the baseball bat at a person. You go to first person view to see the beatdown, and then you come back and you see, like, maybe from a long angle of this person lying prostrate and their head is ruined, and you can have close ups of everyone's face crying and all the grief, and, like, you know, depending on who it is, there's going to be, like, if it's Aaron beat to death, Daryl's going to have a stronger reaction, maybe.
Right.
If it's Michonne beat to death, it's going to be Rick and Carl. They're, like, losing their shit. It's going to be different depending on who it is, right? So I'm not saying, like, the decision to go first person was not the original sin here. The original sin is not showing us what the fuck is going on and how we can react and just trying to make this artificial mystery. Because, again...
Right.
Or cut it, right? Cut it as he starts the eeny, meeny, miny, moe and fade to black slowly as he's going out, and then you can fade back in. That's something that it's still stupid, but it's less stupid than this.
Okay. Along the lines of the brutality and not being able to show it on air, he says, you might be able to get away with the head being crushed into a pulp on HBO, but probably not on AMC. I disagree. There's a head crushing in Breaking Bad that is pretty brutal. That's on AMC, mm-hmm. originally aired. And in an odd way, I think even though you don't really see the gore, it's almost more visceral because it puts you in the victim's shoes. If by putting you in the victim's shoes, you mean you're dead, you're no longer a viewer, sure. A lot of people seem to have that opinion.
Yeah.
Here's something I do agree with. The sound design was masterfully crafted and legitimately made me uneasy because I'd imagine that might be what it would actually sound like for yourself as you're dying by a bat to the brain. We didn't talk about this much, but I think the soundtrack in this was pretty good. Both the Foley stuff and the actual, like, score.
Yeah, he was doing this kind of, what would you call that musical note during the Negan thing?
I forget exactly what it sounded like, but I think it was reminiscent of, like, running a pick up a guitar string real slowly.
It was just kind of creepy, intense.
Yeah.
And I like a lot of sound design, a lot of the musical cues. And again, I'm not saying the first person view was bad.
Okay.
It's withholding the info. I mean, obviously if this was on HBO, it could have been just balls to the wall awesome. And HBO wouldn't be fucking with them on this marketing shit neither. But if you have to do first person for the censors, I question that because, again, last season I saw men get beat over the head of the baseball bat and then their throat slit like they were cattle.
Yeah.
And I remember being disturbed.
It was disgusting. Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. American sensibilities are weird. I don't understand it.
They are.
So, I know people have them, so whatever.
Let me continue with Devin's email. He's actually, I don't know if he quite contradicts himself here, but he says, that being said, fuck this scene. All the pros of this scene's execution are not nearly enough to cover the cons. I'm sick and tired of The Walking Dead pulling this non-committal bullshit. Perhaps I'm overreacting, but I think the decision to not show who was actually killed is just as bad as the Glenn dumpster fiasco, perhaps worse. I just think The Walking Dead I just wish The Walking Dead had the balls to commit to a choice and deal with the consequences. Yeah, so I don't know where you fall on this, Devin, because seems like you're saying,
maybe
speaking out
saying,
of both sides of your mouth.
Maybe he's saying the stuff that I could agree with. Like, I don't think that the camera choice and all that was a bad way to do it.
Oh, okay.
He's saying
making
it
the distinction
was
between just not showing the death
and
the POV.
Do you think that they're so cynical that they're actually monitoring, like they're trying to get social media metrics to find out who the person that they can kill? They don't even know in the writer's room who they've killed yet. They're like waiting to see who's the one, like, kill anyone but this, or is there any way that they're monitoring this to carefully craft it? That doesn't make it better. I'm not saying interesting. I'm just saying, like, I wonder how cynical they are about this.
That was definitely suggested by some of our emailers. Like,
really?
Maybe they don't even know who they're killing yet. Maybe they're doing the Villigan thing of writing themselves into a corner they come out. But the idea of kind of writing to an end you don't have yet.
Sure.
Maybe.
I mean, again, that's not interesting, but I wonder if that's what they're doing. Like, that's a very cynical kind of like choose your own adventure. And I'm not sure which direction they'd come from. Are they like, what's going to have the maximum emotional impact, or who is the one we can kill and get away with?
Right.
But not too popular.
Uh-huh.
Like, let the discussion come up in Aaron, who we think is going to die, and Aaron, I guess that'd be traumatic because they're, but I could live with that. Is that what they're going to triangulate towards, or like anyone but Daryl?
I don't know.
Is it something they can use in a negotiation table with a person like Norman Reedus where,
hey, we could kill any of you.
Yeah, like,
so.
Yeah, you want $1 million an episode, but you could just get a baseball bat and die.
Right.
And then you get no paycheck.
Then you get a union among the Walking Dead actors where they all say, fuck you, we want more money. And what are you going to do, kill us all with a baseball bat? I don't know.
Replace them with scab. Right. Scab act,
people in bad wigs.
No, like
back
they did that Dukes
of
Hazzard, man. They replaced the main, and they just had the cousins
totally
come
did.
In for some reason.
Yeah,
like just have you just recast Rick. Why not? They do James Bond.
Sure,
I can see
you
these fuckers
out,
making those arguments.
You pointed out though that in the story they can't really kill Rick or Carl,
but they can recast them for sure.
They can recast them, maybe so, but they can't kill them because he specifically says, look. If anybody squirms or says shit when I beat this person to death, poke out Rick, Carl's other eye and feed it to Rick.
So
implying
you do
they're both
that it can't
alive.
Be them. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yep.
So interesting. You said that during the live watch, and I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Brian from Maryland says, I have a theory that Dwight actually saved Daryl's life by shooting him in the shoulder. Dwight knows Negan and his group well, and probably knows Negan will not make a spectacle like this and then kill someone who is sick or maimed. Which might also eliminate Maggie, Carol, or Daryl, which I don't think Carol's in the running here.
No, Carol's not even in the group.
Yeah. The reason Dwight might do this is because Daryl helped him out earlier in the season, and this is payback. What do you think of that? A, how do you think Dwight feels about Daryl? And B, do you think he's trying to protect him? And
Man.
Do you think Negan would kill a maimed or injured person?
It's hard because I got to recuse myself because I know too much about Dwight in universe.
Oh, okay.
And his deal.
All right.
I will say it is kind of interesting to see what was your perception of his character from the last season or last half season versus how he's come back now.
It changed a lot when he came back. I feel a lot more malice and a lot more anger and toward Daryl.
So
I'm not on board with that suggestion. I don't think that's what he was doing.
If you're a non-comic book fan and would want to meditate on that character change,
yeah,
that could be fruitful.
Okay. Mildly interesting. Shelby
yes.
S.
Yes, indeed.
Says, why did they bother with the big emotional goodbye and good luck scene with Eugene if they were only going to show him captured in the next scene? It completely invalidated what was otherwise quite a beautiful character moment. How'd you feel about that with him just coming back?
Yeah, no, you pull out the Eugene, we're not going to see Eugene music anymore. You have him hug it out and he's literally back the next scene. No, that was stupid too. But okay. That's a symptom of there's too fucking many people. Like this
in the cast?
These are these butterfly wings flapping in China fucking shit up in Detroit or whatever the analogy is. Like by doing this Maggie thing and by having all these people outside running around Alexandria, you literally had a situation where the entire main cast is there for the plucking.
Yeah.
And that meant you can't really do things like put them in danger because you then got to plausibly bring them back into it. Yeah, no, there's a lot of things that were structurally wrong and they had to know it was wrong and had to know it was bad when they're in the writer's room or they're incompetent. And I don't think they're incompetent anymore.
I almost feel like this might have benefited from another episode this season. Like, I don't say that very often. Well, this half season. Because they have been balls to the wall most of this half season.
I think they could have cleaned up a little bit of the Morgulizing, but
a small amount, but maybe not a whole episode's worth.
The real problem is, like, they got all the main characters outside of Alexandria with no real good reason.
Yeah.
Just so you can all bring them back and put them in the dirt. And,
right.
Like, I don't know. It's weird. I don't understand it. And, you know, again, Kirkman is better in the comics, and I don't even remember it that much because it's been a long time ago, but Jesus.
Okay. Jerry G says, on Talking Dead, Hardwick announced that they were going to have live Skype calls with viewer reactions.
Oh, yes.
Which would have been amazing. Then, after a spot break,
technical
he said,
difficulties.
Conveniently, the live feed was down, and they'd have to air pre-taped viewer questions, and Jerry calls bullshit on that.
I thought that was very interesting indeed.
And I also heard reports like Hardwick was seeing Twitter comments as they were doing this, and he asked some... He tempered his questions to Kirkman a little bit, given the reaction, the visceral negative reaction on Twitter. I don't know if that also plays into that, but that is surprising.
It definitely had the conspiracy bells going off in my head, but I will say that just the sheer volume could have legitimately crashed the system.
You're right. It absolutely could have.
But, you know, they wouldn't be in this situation if they hadn't made a bad episode. So
here's the other thing about live call-in shows. They have call screeners.
Yeah.
Like, so unless you're going to fake your way into cursing Hardwick out or cursing Kirkman out on the
air. People do all the time.
You
can.
But if your call screeners are good, like real good, that shit shouldn't happen. It's harder than you think.
I guess, but like the thing is how many call screeners they have, and let's say that
right.
Let's say they're getting 100 million calls and
100,000
calls and 999,000 of them are I hate this shit. You should die in a fire. If you got 100 screeners, how are you finding that needle in the haystack where a fan's like, "Oh, I thought that was so expertly done and I can't wait to see next season," and you know, you're looking for the minority. You're looking for the Michelles in the seas of Aarons and Jims.
Yeah, for sure. And it, like you said, it legitimately could have crashed with just volume. So yeah. I'm not ready to like pull the conspiracy cord here.
Mailbag crashed and due to volume. So
right, I
couldn't
get through it all.
Our screener here.
I need a good call screener.
So are you saying the screeners are? Is there like a 2-step process where it's like they call and they say, "Hey, what are you wanting to talk about?" And then they then fake transfer you to Hardwick.
Right. You get a Chris Hardwick.
If you're
going to
go baba booey, baba boo, and they let you run for like 30 seconds. Like, oh, wait a second. Now you're going on. Did they do that?
I don't think so.
Well, then how the hell do you, how you're acting
the
like.
The questions you ask, the people's tones, like, it's harder to sound convincing about loving an episode than you would think. I have to imagine anyway. I don't know. I've never been a
back in the days before Star 69. I pranked many a business and individual, and I would dispute.
That's true, but they were eager to have to take your phone call. These people are probably on guard. Like, let's keep the douchebags off the line.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe
the
it's
2-step process. I think would be genius.
That would be get like I don't know who can do a good Chris Hardwick impression. You're live on Talking Dead.
I was
going
to say,
get him.
Like, that's get a generic,
shout it,
excited
shout
white
it.
Guy, yeah, mm-hmm. and have him, you know.
And then, yeah, when they go, fuck
or
you,
or you
Kirkland,
just say, hey, when you hear the beep, you're live on air.
Okay.
And, like,
and
do like
have
that.
Him go off on a tire.
I don't know. One of my buddy Nick used to call him the Jim Rome show all the time, and there was, like, this process.
Yeah.
So
I know there's a process. I just don't.
But I don't think it was a 2-step fake-out deal. It was just
probably not.
You know,
All right, Cindy M. For the past couple of weeks, everyone has been speculating whether it's Glenn or Daryl that gets Negan's bat. After watching last night's episode, I have a feeling it's neither of these guys. I think it's Aaron. Hear me out. There was literally
leave me out of this.
Literally no real reason for Aaron to accompany Rick and the rest of them to the hilltop, especially when, one, all of your best fighters are not there to help defend Alexandria, and two, you know that another group is actively trying to kill you all. The only way of getting him out of Alexandria was for the writers to reintroduce the I owe it to Maggie bullshit. Number two, Glenn and Daryl are huge show favorites. People like Glenn, Daryl, Rick, Michonne, Carol will get an on-screen death because they mean so much to the viewers. The writers and the producers only had one goal for this episode, and that was to build suspense that a beloved character dies by the hands of Negan and Lucille. Viewers like Aaron because he essentially saved our group. And three is a comic book spoiler that I can't read here. What do you think about that? The kind of the justifications for, oh, you can't kill somebody who's too big, but you do want to kill a beloved character.
No, I'm very...
this suspicious activity of Aaron going with them.
It does seem like he could be the chaff to be easily separated from the wheat.
It seems like it's too easy of a separation. Like,
but also, like,
you're giving me the shit I don't want.
So I did a lot of follow-up research about the dead lesbian trope or bring out your gays kind of trope. And it is pretty breathtaking. And, you know, to the extent that I don't feel like The Walking Dead is aware of because of these landmines, because they always fucking step in them.
Right.
And then, like, do damage control or not afterwards. But you kill the other openly gay character.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, like The Walking Dead didn't have a black guy problem when they killed their first black guy, even though that's a trope. They had the black guy problem after they killed their third black guy in two seasons.
Right.
And it gave them zero character development in the meantime. So I don't know. It is a little suspicious, but, you know, you pack an RV full of literally every main cast member save Father Gale. I'm not even going to say Spencer's a main cast member.
Oh, no.
And Enid neither.
No. He's been in, what, three episodes total?
Yeah, like, it's number speaking lines. But I'm talking about, like, everybody except for Enid and Father Gabriel is in this fucking RV.
Yep.
What are you going to do? Well, and Morgan and Carol, but...
Right.
I'm surprised they didn't have a final way to get them back in there, too.
You think Michonne's going to have to shave her head? She got a big lock cut off. She's going to have a big hole...
No.
Where a dreadlock should be.
Nah.
Because Danai Gurira has, like, shaved head or very short hair.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I could see her being like, you know what? Fuck this wig. Cut off a lock. I'm going bald next season.
It would, I mean, because she's super striking.
Yeah.
In her natural configuration.
Right.
But I don't know.
It's got to be hot, too.
It's got to be. You think, like, wig, when it's 98 degrees in Georgia and you're wearing this fucking Hulk on your head.
Oh, man. I don't feel good about that.
It does... She is... But I don't know. She looks more physically imposing, like larger.
With the big hair?
Yeah. The big hair. It's kind of like, you know, when you know, an animal puffs itself out or you're supposed to stand up and like, ah, when you're...
Yeah.
I do feel like they would miss a little bit of that.
You're blowfish, Michonne.
Yeah. She's blowfishing it with that hair.
All right. Final email from Vicky. I know you guys don't usually watch Talking Dead, but Gimple said something about writing an epic episode to justify this death to the viewers. And Hardwick said that Chandler Riggs tweeted that he doesn't even know who got the bat. Combining all this with the bullshit ending makes me wonder,
possibly be?
Have they even made a final decision yet? I guess we talked about this. On a scale of 1 to 10 being... on a scale of 1 to being on the receiving end of Lucille, how frightened are you at the prospect of the possibility that the writers not even knowing where they were going with this?
I
think we
frightened
talked...
Frightened is hard for me to say because, like... You know, they're capable of anything. They're mad men and women in this writer's room. They're capable of anything.
I mean, frightened to me would suggest that there's a path they could take that would make all of this make sense and be awesome. That path has a fucking roadblock with a chain of walkers down it. That's done.
Well,
you're not going down that road.
Yeah, and also, honestly,
you're going down the, oh my God, they fucked it up again road.
If I want to keep it real and 100, I would say that they kind of crossed that Rubicon with the Glenn situation.
Okay.
Like, I don't know that I will... Like, I was shocked by Denise's death because it was so sudden and I didn't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't really affect me. Like, I'm like, oh, man, I really liked her. It'd have been interesting to see. And, yeah, her and Tara were cute. Like,
Yeah.
Glenn gets beat to death. Like, I guess Maggie would have a visceral reaction just because she's a pregnant woman. And, you know, I bought enough into the patriarchy that still means something to me. Daryl, like, I've been actively campaigning for Daryl to die for like three seasons now. I think he's the most if you really want to get the fan base riled up and say anyone can die, then you do Daryl.
Yep. Plus, he has a ruined shoulder now.
Yeah, he's, you know, that's we talked about this in the live cast, but like, they treat getting shot in the shoulder, arm, or leg like it's no big deal.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, there's nothing in there. It's just a like sack of meat.
Bones that if you hit, that's never going to be right again. There's there's veins and arteries that you just die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I saw Black Hawk Down. I know what happens when you hit that femoral artery. That's not that kind of show. I guess we're just supposed to, that in a world without antibiotics and increasingly few medical technicians, that getting shot in the shoulder, arm, or leg is no big deal. But
anything but a heart or head shot, and
yeah,
you're good.
Yeah.
Maybe a gut shot if you don't get immediate attention.
Sure.
Anyway, yeah, so I don't know. I think the line, that road has already been hoed, and there's no coming back.
It would take a season and a half of really careful storytelling for me to feel emotionally devastated by someone being and I don't know, maybe they could have done it if they did it right this episode. Who knows? But jeez, now that they've done this, like, I don't care. Like, if they're going to hit me this in the first 30 seconds or three episodes into it, I don't care. I got 8 months to brace. Well, 5 months to brace myself for it. And I'll know.
You'll know.
I'll know before the damn preseason coverage. What's
you'll know
happening.
Who it is, how it happens. All
sure.
Of it.
Yeah.
You'll know the opening shots of season 7. It's all going to be there.
So thanks for that, AMC. Yep.
I think that's about it. We don't have any more feedback. Are we doing a spoiler section? I don't have anything to talk about.
I know I had something I wanted to talk about, but I don't remember. And honestly, this is long, and we've got a whole show coming up next week. So if we want to make predictions and like hints, I know there were things I wanted to talk about, but if we want to talk about hints and predictions for next season going on, I'd much rather punt it to next week.
Okay.
Let some of this stink blow out of the room. See if we can, like, you know, come back and have an honest conversation about where we go with The Walking Dead.
All right. That'll all happen in a week, for sure.
All right.
So, thanks, everybody, for listening and sticking with us for a bonanza of an episode here. We will see you next week with a recap of Season 6B. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya.